Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on April 9th, 2017. This is episode 1379. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. And by Capterra. Capterra helps you find and compare software solutions for your business needs with over 400 software categories, from accounting to workflow management. Visit capterra.com/twit and start your free search today. And by Square. Accept every card for the same rate and deposit your money fast with free chargeback protection, no commitment, no hidden fees. Sign up now to get free processing on your first $500 in sales at square.com/techguy. Some terms apply. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. You know it. You know the jazz. What, anything with a chip in it. Augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you have a question or a comment or you'd like to just talk tech. You just want to. You know, it's funny because I've been doing this for, I don't know, since the early 90s. I didn't want to do the math. More than 20 years. But let's say 20. Anyway, a long time. And one of the reasons people, I think, at least in the early days, listen to the radio show, watch the TV shows, is because they felt alone. Alone and afraid in their geekdom. There was nobody in their village that was really into stuff, you know, Quake and computers and stuff like they were. And I think that's still to some degree true. I think geeks, we seek each other out because we kind of speak the same language, and the rest of the world is like, knock it off. Talk normal. So I'm the bridge. I think of myself as the bridge between normal people, real people, and the geek people. I'm on the geek side, but I can wave across the bridge to you and explain how this stuff works. And I'll try to do it in plain English. And if I don't, please let me know. 888-827-5536. Tax time is coming up. I have a business, so I have an accountant, but my mom, who's 84, doesn't. So I thought, well, this would be fun. I haven't done TurboTax in a few years. So I fired up the TurboTax and did her taxes for her. I had her. It was very modern. I had her. She was on FaceTime, so I could talk to her and ask questions. She's in Rhode Island. I'm out here in California. And we did the taxes. We've come a long way. You can do it all online. There's no software anymore. It's all on the web. It's very easy to do. They, I think, do a TurboTax is one of several, but this is the one I'd always used from Intuit, and they did a great job. But I have to warn you that this modern age has also brought some scary stuff when it comes to tax time. In particular, and I had no idea, but this is a thing: hackers stealing your information and filing your return and getting the refund. Apparently, it's not uncommon. And the IRS, it just kind of makes me mad. Last year, the IRS noticed that there was this online thing, free application for federal student aid, FAFSA. It was an online system you could go to if you had a student or you were a student and you wanted to know how much financial aid you might get for college based on your income. Apparently, FAFSA got enough personal information that it could be used by bad guys. And in October, the IRS sent a little memo over to the Department of Education saying, yeah, the system could be abused. Bad guys could use it to get personal information. But, and this is what gets me, because up to 15 million people use the system for convenience, they kept it online. You know, it's so popular, we're just going to let people keep doing it, even though bad guys could use it. In February, 4 months later, the IRS noticed a pattern of fraudulent activity. It shut it down last month. However, there are now, according to the IRS, 100,000 accounts. 100,000 accounts. People who started the application used the data retrieval tool, which apparently is the problem, because it could retrieve things like your tax return, and then didn't finish. Because once you got somebody's tax return, you got them. The IRS is alerting people. If you get, you know, we keep telling you, oh, the IRS will never alert you. Oh, yeah, they will. I presume they'll do it by mail. But they're alerting those 100,000 people because if it wasn't them that filled out the FAFSA and got the data retrieval, it might have been a bad guy who could use that information to file your tax returns for you. Oh, how convenient. And claim your refund. And apparently, this is a problem. According to the IRS, the 2016 tax season, this tax season, saw a 400% increase in phishing and malware. You may, you know, this is where you and your loved ones, and, you know, especially if you have loved ones who aren't too sophisticated with, you know, technology, they may get an email that appears to be from the IRS. Cyber criminals are trying to steal W-2 information. The IRS said, oh, great, one of the most dangerous email phishing scams they had ever seen. Great. Thanks for letting us know. What is it? It's less. It's 9 days from filing time, a week from Monday. And you, oh, man, the FAFSA tool is still online. The IRS is developing software to hide personal tax data on the FAFSA tool, and that will be available in October. Now, you could still use the system, but you have to enter in your own tax information. It won't look it up for you anymore. Crazy. Crazy. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to scare you. You have a week from Tuesday to file in the U.S. But if, you know, what is the sign that you're not going to get your refund? You know, you file your tax return. I don't know how they handle it. But that, if you think about it, that seems like a risky kind of hack because then the bad guy's going to get a check and has to cash it. Isn't there a paper trail at that point? Anyway, just something to be aware of. You know, this is, it happens every year. Tax time is a time ripe for hacker exploitation. Speaking of hackers, there is a hacking group called the Shadow Brokers that it was about, I don't know, was it a year ago? They said that they had a huge trove of NSA hacks, and we will offer this to the highest bidder. They asked for $7 million in Bitcoin. And they didn't get any bids. Well, they got one bid for $9,000, and that wasn't enough, I guess. So the Shadow Brokers have now released the catalog of NSA. They were hoping, I think, the government would pay for this. Released the catalog of NSA hacking. Of course, this means it's a very busy day today for a lot of people, the NSA, of course, but security researchers, hackers, etc., going through this trove, tons of information, trying to figure it out. OS X Reverser tweeted, when files are old, while the files are old, they are, they're, some of them are very old, there's a lot of interesting stuff. What they were looking at, methods, very cool. Might not be interesting to young minds, but this file is gold for 90s old farts, says OS X Reverser. Some of the hacks were very specific. There's a hack for instance, a Digital Equipment Corporation computer, I think it was the PDP-10, of which there were only 11 in the country at the time. They're very targeted. Edward Snowden tweeted, quick review of the Shadow Brokers leak. It's nowhere near the full library, but there's so much here, and this is interesting. The NSA should be able to instantly identify where the set came from and how they lost it. So this, in fact, there's a history of that. There were offensive cyber tools leaked from this equation group at the NSA previously, last August. And after the leak, the FBI arrested a former NSA contractor for stealing them. They knew, it's got to be Harold did that. Harold stole more than 50 terabytes, 50 trillion bytes worth of data over the course of 20 years working for both the NSA and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. He is apparently a suspect in this most recent leak as well. So, couldn't get the $7 million, decided to forego the $9,000 and released it. Busy day today for security researchers who will be looking. I think it's so old that most of it's not going to affect us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take some phone calls right after this. Oh, I didn't see that. Thank you, Bitcoin warrior. Why did I get off
this year? Thousands of victims are going to pay hackers over
$1 billion. What happened? Let's reconnect. I got disconnected from the server. There we go. The Bitcoin warrior group behind the iCloud ransom claims it has received payment. Could that be? This is from International Business Times. Not the most credible. The group that collected millions of iCloud accounts said they got payment from Apple of $482,000, 401 Bitcoin, on Friday. Wow. The Turkish crime family. Now, I don't know if you could trust the Turkish crime family. Probably not. Some suggest it's just the group trying to save face. Apple, we don't know. They claimed on Twitter to be in touch with a negotiator working on an agreement with Apple. Remember, they said they had something like $800 million Apple and iCloud credentials, and they were going to erase people's phones if they didn't get paid by today. They say they got paid, or April 7th, I guess. They say they got paid. Yeah, if you're the Turkish crime family, you do not want to look like Apple blew you off. Oh, boy. Well, they asked for a lot more, didn't they? What was the original ransom that they were asking for? A lot more. Loquacious said, you had me at crime family. I did not see the new iPhone 8 leaks, although I don't. Well, let me go look. I guess we're at the point. Yeah, I expected we'd have some good leaks by now, right? Because this is about when they'd start making them. Tidal owner Jay-Z has removed all his albums from Apple Music. Nice, Jay-Z. Constant negativity from Apple's Mac Pro users led Apple to develop a new Mac Pro. It's constant negative. You're constantly negative. Here I am innovating my ass off, and you're just being negative. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Looking, lo and behold, Kim Schaffer has arrived. She is looking, you're looking very fresh today. Very
fresh.
Springy. Well,
I'm fresh.
Those are spring colors.
Yeah, well, I'm willing that rain to stop, and it has today.
It's beautiful. The sun came out, and we're having a beautiful day.
It's gorgeous.
You look fabulous. You're ready to answer some phones.
I've already done that.
Wow, look at you. So you have.
Yes.
All lined up in a row, neatly, tidily. Which of these 10 pins should I knock down first?
And there are a lot of women. I'm really happy.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. Joanne and San Juan Capistrano. Hard for me to say.
Where the swallows return each year.
She has the same problem a lot of us do with the new Macs and them removing all the ports and all of that.
Oh, I hate that. I just hate that.
She had a few questions on that.
Hate it when that happens. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. And hello, Joanne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to talk with you.
Thanks for calling.
So I have been looking a few times at the Mac laptops, and every time I look at them, I just get confused because everything's missing.
They took my ports away.
It's not just there's something missing, and then there's something added, which I really don't like too much, which is the touch bar.
Okay, I've sort of already decided I probably really don't need that.
Yeah, what I ended up buying, well, if you want a new Mac, you're going to be getting the new port-free Macs.
Right.
That's just the way it is. And it's, you know what, it's not just Apple. Everybody in the PC industry is moving in that direction of these new, they call them Type-C connectors. They're high-speed USB connectors, but they're also monitor connectors and power connectors. They do it all. And on the inexpensive touch barless, nothing Apple does is inexpensive, the less expensive touch barless MacBook Pro, which is what I ended up trading in my touch bar version for the function key version, you're going to get two of them. And on the higher end ones with touch bar, you're going to get four of them, two on each side. And what you end up doing, and it's not a bad thing, I guess, is spending money on dongles. We call them dongles that translate, so you can buy one that connects type C to the old type A connector for your old type A devices. You can, you know, there's a variety of things, and I just ended up upgrading. And the truth is, we're going to be doing type C everywhere, so this has to happen at some point.
So it will catch up. It's not like I'm going to be sitting there going, okay, now what?
No, not at all. What do you connect right now to your laptop?
I use an SD card for my camera.
Right.
Sometimes I have some DVDs, like, for example, our accountant just sent our tax return on a DVD for us.
Wow, that's old school. Your accountant, I'm sure, thinks he's really with it, with the times. But I guess
they'll have to switch to something else.
Yeah.
That's probably what I usually connect.
You can buy an external DVD drive, a super drive. If you already have a super drive for the Mac, you can buy an adapter that just takes the USB connector and turns it into a Type-C connector.
Yeah, I don't.
You'll end up buying a few of those. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, they dropped that a while ago, by the way, the DVD player. The camera card, you have two choices, camera card reader. You can either buy an adapter for your existing card reader. My suggestion, though, is bite the bullet and buy a new Type-C card reader that's USB 3.1 or even better, Thunderbolt. Both of those technologies are supported on that port. Reason is that's a lot faster than the old USB 2. So your card reader will work better. It'll import those pictures at a much faster clip. And you'll notice a difference. It'll really do it fast.
Okay. And then in terms of storage...
External drives...
I have an external drive for my old laptop that I get a whole new one.
It's a similar suggestion, which is you can get an adapter that will work just fine with the old drive. But if you want to get a new drive, get a Thunderbolt 3 drive, because that is a much faster technology. And that will make that drive as fast as an internal drive. It'll be a much more useful drive for you.
Okay.
So you get the benefit of high speed on these new ports, and that's kind of making up for it. And the good news is this is going to be a standard, not just on Apple, but everywhere for some time.
Okay. So in terms of the actual model for the laptop, if I don't want the little touchpads, then...
Well, so Apple has three MacBook Pros, a 15, a 13, and one of the 13s is... function key, the old school function key.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to touch bar. Now, let me tell you, this is my opinion. Others disagree, but my opinion of the touch bar, I tried it, I bought one, is it's not useful because it changes all the time. You know, if you're a touch typer, you don't want to look at the keyboard. You want to keep working. So all the things that happen on the touch bar are relatively useless because every program that supports it does something different. So you have to look down and say, oh, it's doing autocorrect. I can go through my photos with that button. I don't want to look at it. And then it has another side effect that I really don't like, which is I hit it accidentally frequently. And because there's functions on the touch bar, you know, I'm typing, I hit the backspace key, and it's very sensitive. If you just kind of at the edge of your pinky hits the touch bar, all of a sudden Siri pops up. It says, yeah, what do you want? I didn't want you. I wanted to hit a backspace. So that, to me, that negates the value of that touch bar. It really, I have to say, I love Macs. I use iPhones. I use iPads. I've been an Apple fan since, you know, the 70s. But Apple, I think this Touch Bar was an attempt by Apple to say, I know everybody else is doing touch computing, but we're not going to. This is better, and it's not. It's what we call in the business a kludge. It's a kludge. It's an ungainly, kind of inelegant solution to a problem that actually has been solved on the Windows side. Put touch on the screen. You know, that's okay, Apple. You could do that. They've said we'll never do touch. Partly that's because they have such a successful platform with the iPad and iPhone that is touch. They don't want to confuse people. Anyway, my suggestion, it's not as fast. So the best, fastest MacBooks are touch bars. That they did not make one without the touch bar that is as fast. But I was so unhappy with the touch bar, I traded it in and got the function key one. It's theoretically slower. I like it. It's fine with it. And it's got a...
Well, it's probably faster than the one that I have that's 6 years old.
Oh, it is absolutely... Oh, you're going to love it. And in fact, I got a great deal because I bought a refurbished one from Apple. Get it from Apple. But if you Google Apple refurb, you can go to the Apple outlet store, and they have a number of these function keys. I think there are other people with buyer's remorse that went the other direction. So they have a number of these. I got the 13-inch with function keys, and I'm happy as a clam.
Well, I'll check that out then.
And you just get, you know, you get used to the fact that, you know, we don't have card readers anymore. We don't have, but this is all computers. If I look at other companies' laptops in the Windows side, it's all the same now. And the nice thing is Type-C power is not proprietary. And this is actually the biggest gain, in my opinion. You know, every laptop in the world has its own dedicated proprietary power cord, and you have to go buy an expensive one. Everybody's using Type-C now, so you have Type-C everywhere, and you can use it on your laptop or on your phone. And so we now have one universal power source. That's a big, big gain, in my opinion. To me, it offsets the dongle problem. I can power up my laptop even with my phone charger. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, yeah, if you have a 6-year-old Apple, it's time to get a new one, I think.
Oh, I know. It's just a matter of time. But I said every time I go into the store and look, I walk away because I don't know what I want.
Well, yeah, again, it's just my opinion, but I just don't think the touch bar was a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think I would use it. I don't even use function keys. So.
Do you touch type?
Sort of.
I mean, the question is, are you looking at the keyboard when you're typing, or are you looking at the screen?
Probably a combination of the two. Right.
So for people who are normally looking down anyway, the touch bar might have some use, and as more and more applications come out that support it. But my big problem in computing, you don't want an unpredictable thing. You don't want something on your keyboard. You don't want keys on your keyboard that change all the time.
Right.
That's you can't learn how to use it.
Yeah, I think when they showed it to me, I kind of went, I don't know that I would use that.
The one good thing, and I didn't mention this, but I should have, that the touch bar does is it adds a fingerprint reader. That's very useful.
Yeah, I don't think I would use that either, but.
Yeah. Save money. Get the MacBook Pro with just the old-fashioned function keys. It's up to date. It has the latest processors and everything. It's just, it's not quite as fast as Apple wants everybody to buy the MacBook Pro with a touch bar.
Right, but I don't think I would use it. No. Anyway, as I said, it's going to be better than what I have. So.
It is, and you'll be very happy, I think.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It may be the last great Mac. That's what I'm worried about. This is the last Mac. This is it. Like Apple did one just so that you could, you know, so people like me could, all right, you don't like the touch bar, you can get this. But I bet you they don't make them anymore that way. And I should have quoted this article. I'll read this when we come back. Constant negativity. this is in Mac rumors. Constant negativity from pro users led Apple to develop a new Mac Pro, which will come out in maybe next year, maybe not till 2019, which means never. By the way, if it doesn't come out in 2018, it will never come out. They're not going to. You tell me they're going to take 2 years to develop this? No. No. So, this is from an inside unnamed source. Apparently, the negative response to the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, which many complained was not oriented towards pro users, was a major factor. Apple saw a surge of orders for older MacBook Pros instead of the new model, and that, combined with a reaction to the LG 5K display and the, quote, constant negativity from professional users, led Apple to, quote, double down on professional users. What's the source on this? Tidbits heard, quote, this is from OS News, from people and sources who know their stuff. We don't know if this is inside or not, but it does make sense. The decision to move ahead with a modular Mac Pro replacement was made in recent months, with development starting only a few weeks ago. Oh, my God. Suggesting it's going to be a long wait, given a rough estimate of the length of time it normally takes to develop a project. It could be late 2018 or even 2019 before we see the machine. All Apple said is it won't be this year. They did make a commitment, though, about the, you know, if they thought it might be next year, they would have said it's going to be next year. The decision to go ahead and develop a modular Mac Pro replacement seems to have been made only in recent months of development. So I should really quote the original source here, which is Tom Holwerda in OS News. Let's give them the quote. I've been begging Apple to just, they don't need to design a new computer. Just go back to the old cheese grater. It was perfect. Just update it. But no, we got to design a new one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome home. The Geek Show is on the air. All right. You got me started. She got me started. Let me talk a little bit about this. This was a weird week if you're a Mac fan. Apple, in my memory, Apple has never done what they did this week. They brought in five journalists, basically five bloggers, from TechCrunch, Axios, Daring Fireball. These are all blogs. Missing a couple. BuzzFeed. They didn't bring in Apple, you know, magazine journalists. They didn't bring in The Wall Street Journal. They didn't bring in the New York Times. They brought in five geek blogs. They brought them into the Apple Design Center, where they were briefed by Phil Schiller, the chief of marketing there, and Craig Federighi, who's in charge of Macintosh, and they went in the Design Center, and there's machines and models covered up with black cloths, and I'm sure these five guys thought. Actually, it was four guys and one gal thought, we're going to see the new Macs. They've got the new Macs. And then they sit down and Phil Schiller says, okay, bad news. I got some bad news. We blew it. I've never heard Apple admit this. We blew it. You know that Mac that I said was such a great innovation a few years ago? Well, actually, you know, three or four years ago, we announced it in 2013, you know, that one, the one Leo bought for $3,000 starting price and never updated in 3 years, that one. Turns out, who knew? Turns out that design wasn't a great design. We can't upgrade it. We can't put newer chips in it. We can't put newer video cards in it. We can't upgrade it. We can't improve it. So, back to the drawing board. And I'm sorry, all those people who bought those Mac Pros. Where the trash can, they call it colloquially, because it's, you know, it's like a black trash can, is going in the trash can. Here's the good news. Don't worry. They suddenly got religion. We love our professional users, our hardcore users, our video editors, our graphics designers. We love you guys so much that we are going to start from scratch and design a brand new upgradable Mac Pro. We kind of have to. I want to point out that in 2012, they had a really good upgradable case. It was a big case, could handle up to six drives, had multiple slots for additional video cards. You could even upgrade the CPU. It was all modular. It was beautiful. We call it the cheese grater because it looked like a cheese grater. It was a beautiful design, easy case to open. And, you know, if you're a pro, the case is under the desk. You don't care if it's beautiful. You care if it's functional. So what did they do? They made a non-functional, beautiful Mac Pro that nobody could use or upgrade. It ended up a doorstop in my house, literally. It's a gorgeous doorstop, though. But one of the most expensive doorstops ever. So instead of going back to a design that worked, we're going to start from scratch. Now, it was an interesting article in OS News. I got to quote Tom Holwerda, who has he's talked to sources at Apple. Now, Apple said, but the new design will not be available this year. That's all they said. New design, not available this year. But pros, hang with us. This was the message. Don't give up. Don't go buying those Windows machines. I know they look pretty. I know they're not. But whatever you – I know you can use your same programs and everything. But whatever you do, don't go buying those Windows machines, because we're going to have a new Mac Pro you're going to love. Well, it won't be this year. Holwerda says it might not be next year. He says, my sources tell me they didn't decide to start designing this new Mac Pro until a couple of weeks ago. Until a couple of weeks ago. And the normal design cycle is more than a year. Typically, you know, between a year and 2 years. So Holwerda says it might not be available 2019. Notice Apple, and I think they chose their words carefully, did not say when it would be available. They just said not this year. They didn't say next year. If they thought it'd be available next year, they would have said next year. They didn't say next year. Not this year. And he says that this all came about because of the new MacBook Pro with Touch Bar. After the announcement of the new MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, orders for refurbished old MacBook Pros supposedly went through the roof. And after the initial batch of reviews came up, they shot even higher. Guess what? I bought the Touch Bar, reviewed it, said it's terrible, and went to the refurb store and bought an old one. This response, Holwerda writes, to the new MacBook Pro with Touch Bar took Apple completely by surprise. Combined with the problems surrounding the LG Ultrafine 5K display, Apple decided, we're not going to sell displays anymore. We're going to let LG do it. And then they designed a display that if you used it, messed up your internet. I kid you not. If the display was anywhere near your internet router, your router stopped working because they didn't shield it properly. So now Apple's thinking, why did we let LG do this? The constant combined with the constant negativity from professional Apple users, the company decided to double down on professional users. Well, hallelujah. So Apple said, we're going to get some new Pro stuff, including a new iMac Pro. That will come out this year, they said. And a new Mac Pro, not this year. Apparently, according to the Holwerda's sources, they're also looking at additional Retina MacBook Pro models without the Touch Bar. Now, in the past, I would say, oh, Apple, you know, will never back down on something like that. They don't do that. But they never apologize either, and they apologize this week. So maybe they will. And other pro-oriented features like hooking up an iPad Pro to a Mac and using it like a Cintiq-like device, a device you can draw on. I have to say, if a company, and traditionally in my biz, and I've been covering this for some time, if a company announces that they're going to have a new product you're going to love, but not this year, and possibly not next year, we have a word for that. It's called vaporware. It's a non-existent product that may never ship. We've seen it over and over again. And I have to think that this is Apple's last-ditch attempt to convince people who use computers for high-end computing. Again, video editors, sound editors, musicians, rocket ship designers, 3D designers, graphics designers. They're trying to convince this group, which they apparently suddenly found is important, not to ditch Apple. But they're trying to convince them with vaporware, with promises, not with products. And those professionals are going to leave. It's over for the. I think this is as convincing evidence as I've seen that, and many have theorized this, Apple's doing so well with the iPhone and the iPad that it's just going to stop making Macs. As soon as they feel like, if you look at their current advertising campaign, that may be today, the advertising campaign for the iPad Pro, what's it saying? You don't need a PC. The iPad Pro does everything your computer does. You don't need it. As soon as Apple can credibly say, you don't need a computer, they're abandoning the Macintosh. And if my advice to professionals, start getting to know Windows or Linux. I've been using a lot more Linux lately. But I don't think Apple, I think they can't pull it out. I think this is more than an apology and an admission of failure. This is an attempt to convince you that they're not giving up. And you know what? I predict another event with five more tech bloggers 1 year from now in which Apple says, yeah, it's not going so well. And you know, nobody's buying these Macs anymore. You're all buying iPads. I think we're just going to make iPads and iPhones. Oh, bad news. Isn't it? It's so sad to me. All right, we're going back to the phones. I feel bad about wasting your time. I'll take more calls, but I wanted to get this out of my system because it's very sad to me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Doesn't mean they're not going to be profitable. A lot of people think, well, oh, come on, they're the most valuable company in the world. How can you say that this is a bad strategy? Well, but this is, yeah, right now. Right now. Right now. We're talking about the future. And I don't care if they're profitable. I'm not talking about stocks. I'm not talking about how much money they're making. I'm talking about what products they're making for users. I don't think they think they're exiting it yet. I think this is a holding. I agree with you. Web 7043 saying if you're exiting the business segment, you don't hold apologetic meetings and promise new products. No, you're right. I think this is a weird meeting, by the way. It's weird for so many reasons, and we don't know what was off the record. My guess, though, is Apple is panicking because they still have a lot of products, Macs, in the pipeline, and they would really like pros to keep buying those until they're ready to pull the trigger. So what this is a holding action to convince pros, no, guys, no, really, keep using that Final Cut. Keep using that Final Cut. What else is there, right? Lightroom, Photoshop, Adobe stuff you can use on Windows. And I think there is a problem because the iPhone is kind of, it's hard to think of what you would do, yeah, to improve the iPhone, right? Our show today brought to you by The Tracker. Do you ever lose stuff? What was it? Newsweek said the average person spends something like 55 minutes a day looking for stuff they own but can't find. See, if you attach one of these, the tracker, to your keys, to your remotes, to your bicycle, to your luggage, pair it to your phone. It's a little Bluetooth tracker. It uses Bluetooth LE. See, this little tiny thing. It's about the size of a quarter. Whoa. Now I lost the tracker. You can't lose the tracker once you pair it to the phone. Let me go down and get it. But it's that light and about the size of a quarter. These are so cool. You don't want it. It's always the case that you lose your keys when you can't take the time to find them, right? You're late for work. Now I can't. And it just drives you crazy. So let's not do that anymore. Let's get the tracker. This is the Tracker Bravo, their latest version. It pairs to any smartphone. It actually has a separation alert. So if you leave your phone behind, the tracker will beep at you. If you leave the tracker or whatever the tracker is attached to behind, your phone will beep at you. And the tracker has a little kind of a cool little button on it that if you press it, that makes your phone go, you can set whatever sound you want to make. So if you've, where's my phone? Is it in the cushions? You just press this tracker button. Family sharing lets you track the same Tracker Bravo from multiple phones. So that's kind of cool. So you can... You and your family can all look for your keys together. and of course, with 4.5 million trackers sold, they have the world's largest, best crowd GPS network. This is kind of cool. See, everybody who's running the tracker software on their phone is, in effect, helping you find your keys. Whenever they walk by your tracker, their phone goes, oh, I see Leo's tracker, and it'll send a note to my tracker application saying, hey, your keys were seen here. So it's constantly updating. And now they've got a distance indicator on the tracker app, which makes, it's like cold, cold, warm, hot. It makes it much easier. You find if you're getting closer to your items. 30-day money-back guarantee. Give the tracker a try. Go to thetracker.com, thetracker.com. There's no E at the end there. Thetracker.com. Our promo code is TechGuy, And you do want to use that. Load up your cart. Get all the trackers you want. They're very affordable. They've even got waterproof covers so you can put it on your dog. Load up your cart and then add the offer code TECHGUY and they'll throw in an extra free Tracker Bravo with any order. Get the carabiner. TheTracker.com. Promo code TECHGUY. Never lose your things again and never spend any time looking for them with the Tracker. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Sorry, let's get back to the phones. I'd get off my high horse here and talk to Richard in Los Angeles. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I have a problem, of course. That's why I'm calling.
Oh, all right.
Relatively, no, not relatively, fairly small fonts on various websites.
Yeah.
And I can't figure out how to make them bigger.
It's a pet peeve because websites these days are designed by kids. It's kids in their 20s. And they have perfect vision, right? Right? You young people, why I oughta. And they design websites not only with tiny fonts to mock their elders, but with low contrast, too.
True.
Right? Lately, you're seeing a lot of gray text on gray backgrounds and stuff. And it's like, who designs this? And by the way, we're not alone. I've talked to many designers who say, yeah, this is a terrible, despicable trend. And not all of them are over 40. However, if you want people over 40 to read your website, please consider us, will you? We're people too, you know.
Anything can be done?
Yes. First, there are a number of things that can be done. Windows or Mac?
Windows.
Okay. So almost all browsers will let you just enlarge text arbitrarily, unless the designer has been really nefarious and locked it down, which they can do. But you should try. In most browsers, Control Plus will increase the size of the font. In fact, I do that all the time. Partly because I show screens on television on our podcasts, and you know you can't read those small fonts, so I make them really big. And so, Control Plus, or you know, look it up. It'll be in your browser. It'll be in one of the menus, probably the View menu, and you'll see increase font size, and they'll have a keystroke combination next to it. So if I'm wrong or using a different browser, that will increase it. And similarly, Control Minus will reduce it. And on many browsers, Control Zero goes back to normal, what the designer specified. So that's one solution. That's kind of the ad hoc solution I use frequently. You can, if you want to get fancy, you'll notice in your browser settings, many browsers allow you to define either a minimum font size. So check and see where you can say, no, I don't want to see anything smaller than 9-point type, which is pretty small. You could turn that into 12 or 14. You could also have a default normal. There's the way that web pages work, they have a normal style sheet. And you can change this is an advanced way to do it. Change the style sheet to reflect your interest. You can actually use that to get rid of low contrast and things like that. You should also check the accessibility settings of your operating system. Windows in the control panel, Apple in the system preference panes. That is another place to go to improve accessibility. It means improve the accessibility of your screen or your computer. And among other things, you can have high contrast forced on the whole screen. You can have the font size change. The problem with those changes, of course, they're more than just the browser. They're global to everything on the screen. And another thing that I often do is choose a different resolution on the screen. So as we get older, one of the things we'd like to do is have everything on the screen be a little bit bigger, not just on the browser, but the text under the icons, maybe even the icons themselves. As we get bigger screens, those seem to get smaller because the resolutions are going up. And a high resolution means a smaller font, a smaller icon. So you can change the resolution in your display. Used to be in Windows, you could change the DPI, dots per inch, or actually they called it dot pitch, not DPI, but your dot pitch. There's now a slider in Windows 10. They made it a little bit less easy or less granular, but there is a slider that can make fonts bigger. That will do it globally for the operating system as well.
Where would I get that slider?
It's in the display control panel.
Okay. I'm going to try all of the above.
Yeah, you can. So I... every time I get a new system, I will customize it to be easier on my old eyes.
Right. Okay. This has been so annoying, and I just bought a new monitor.
Well, part of this is because you got a new monitor. And it's a nice, it's a beautiful, I bet, high res monitor, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and of course, now that it's high res, that means smaller dots, so everything is harder to read. My friend Kevin Marks, who is a web designer, he's also a person of a certain age. He's over 40. He's kind of legendary. He's worked at Google. He's worked at Apple. He worked at British Telecom. He worked at the BBC. He's a legend in the business. He's a brilliant web standards guy. And he's written an article. He put it out last year called How the Web Became Unreadable. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. I thought my eyesight was beginning to go. It turns out I'm suffering from design. And he bemoans this, and I think this article was heard by a lot of people. He kind of influenced designers a little bit, and I'm glad. I think this needs to be brought up again and again and again, because the web has become unreadable, for not just for older people, for everybody.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure people half my age, and I'm 80, would have trouble with this.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think this could be solved if people just paid a little more attention. When you design a website, I presume the point of the website is that people come visit it. You don't want to design a website that leaves people out.
And people come visit it to read it.
Right. Well, I hope.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for the call. I'm glad. You got me on another high horse. I could go on about this one. And the problem is, Richard and I talk about this, people go, oh, well, they're old timers. Especially those 20-something engineers. Oh, they're old timers. You know, just get some reading glasses, pops. No. No. It's not just us. It's everybody. We all are struggling with your silly little low-contrast website and your tiny little fonts. Stop being such a designer. Start thinking about usability. A good designer focuses on usability. This is a battle that has to be fought over and over again, I'm sorry to say. Remember when there's a great computer technology magazine, I love it, called Wired. And when it first came out, maybe 20 years ago, the guys who founded it, the Rosettos and Louis Rosetto and the designers thought, let's make it super hip. And they made it unreadable. It was like yellow text on lime green backgrounds and, you know, dark purple back pages with black text. But it was part of the ethos. It's like, yeah, we know you can't read it. Isn't that cool? Wired is much more legible now that Condé Nast owns it. You can read it. 8888 Ask Leo. I mentioned I will put the great Kevin Marks article, if you want to read this, on why the web is unreadable. I'll put that in our show notes. Everything goes in the show notes. Everything I talk about, all the answers, even audio and video from the show, that's all on the web, free and readable. We made sure you could I should check, but I'm pretty sure we made sure you could read it, even though we had a 20-something designer. TechGuyLabs.com. No charge. Wide open. It's got a great search. You can go back in time. You can look by show, by hour, by question. TechGuyLabs.com. And I'd love your comments, too. If you've got a thought, you can always add it in the comments there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. If the clock is accurate, let me see if it's accurate. Somebody says it's a good way to figure out what the latency is. So my computer says at the top of the screen there, 11:57, 47, 48, 49. Is that what the clock is saying? No, see, the clock's a little off. And the computer is accurate, I think. 11:57, 59, 58 mark. So the clock is 11 seconds off from my computer. I'm not buying these radio clocks anymore. Because they don't work. They're supposed to sync up. I have to put it out in the parking lot for it to sync up. So every once in a while, John will come and take it. My clock will be gone. It's out in the parking lot. And I have them all at home. Yeah. It's so frustrating. So I just decided I'm buying a quartz clock because you can't set these very well, right?
I've determined this is a good reason to move to Boulder, Colorado.
If we were in Boulder, it'd be great. Is NIST in Boulder? No, it's in the Fort Collins.
Oh, also.
Well, that's near Boulder. Boulder's probably got better reception.
There's one in Hawaii, too.
What?
There's one in Hawaii also.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
for people who can't get to Fort Collins. Oh, I didn't know that. Can I? Can you listen to it on here? WWDC? Because can I get it on the web? Is it WW? What is it? WW? The time, you know, it goes. Yeah. The time is now.
Does it say what the?
Boy, if the, I hope this isn't the official.
Five.
This isn't the official website. This looks like it was designed in 1998. This is like a big one, big GIF. Where can I? Yeah, this is the official government website. It's time.gov. Oh my God, that's pathetic. So where is the, where can I listen?
WWV.
WWV?
Yeah, it was WWVH for the one in Hawaii.
There you go. Now, could, I should be able to just.
Broadcasting at 5, at 2.5, 5, 10,
yeah.
15,
the time
25.
Is, I love that. I want to hear it, though. Where do I hear it? Chat room has a link, I'm sure.
Or just Google, listen to WWV.
There you go. Aren't you smart? You didn't know how to use the Google, my friend.
You know, back in the day when I was doing astrophotography, I had my shortwave radio out.
I know. I used to have it going all the time. Here it is. No. Voice, time tick. All right. I should have gone back to the listen to. What's wrong with you people? I just want to listen to it. this is like link bait.
Time like, dot is?
Time dot is? Really?
Well, Belgian guy thinks so.
That's a good site. IS is... oh, no, but I want to hear it. My time is exact. See, I knew my computer's up to date. So the clock... So it's 12:01, but the clock says... Yeah, the clock's 11 seconds fast. I'll just leave this up for you. Then you'll know what time it is.
There's got to be a way to listen to this.
There's got to be.
I'll bring in my shortwave radio. I'll plug it in.
Dong, dong, dong.
And then it skips at 50, 10 seconds before the top of the hour, it skips a click.
Word is,
right?
Look at this. Another, here's this. This is the studio. This is the WWV on air studio. They have, look at that computer. What the hell is that? No wonder their website looks that way, but you can read it. Guess the time and win $1,000, it says down here. WWV, the tick, all the time, all the time. Is that a joke?
The tick.
The tick. Oh, that's so funny.
Okay, I'll bring it in my shortwave radio.
No, no, there's got to be an online. Here we go. Yahoo Answers. Oh, God. What is this? Make Yahoo the default search. No, I'm not oathing it. I will not oath it. Oh, let's see. No. And no. I want internet. You know why they don't do internet? Because of latency. Oh, here we go. Oh, 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 something's happening. 3, 2, 1. Skip this ad. Oh, that's an ad. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it's one of those. This is horrible. I don't want a link. That is the worst shortener I've ever seen. And it didn't even give me anything. That was a terrible link shortener. Look at that. Thanks, Yahoo Answers. Okay, here's another one. PKS World. I bet this is ancient. Yeah. PSK World doesn't exist. How about Radio Locator? I don't want that. That's really interesting. You cannot, you can't get an internet WWV. Huh?
There's a recording on YouTube. We can just play.
Oh, there is a recording. I can play the recording. You want to hear it? But it won't. The time won't be right.
This is my reception of WWV and WWVH time signals right now on 10 megahertz. I'm receiving both
typical
Colorado
ham.
WWV and Hawaii WWVH. And during the next minute here.
This is radio station WWVH there it is. Hawaii.
Oh, this is the Hawaii.
On internationally allocated standard carrier frequencies of 2.5, 5, 10, and 15 megahertz.
You know, we could just use one of my radios in there. One of my ham radios. What good is recorded time signal? That's useless. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We'd love to hear from you if you want to ask a question, make a suggestion. Correct me if I'm wrong. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, just use Skype Out or some other VoIP solution. You can call those toll-free numbers. Shouldn't cost you a penny. Lisa's next in Downey, California. Hello, Lisa. Oh, did I keep her on hold too long? Lisa, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, I'm sorry I kept you on hold so long. Thanks for your patience.
All right.
I'm just a gas bag today. I apologize.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay, but I think I got some scammer got me something.
Might be. They're out there, boy. They're out there in force. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, tax time is really popular.
I know, yeah. And this time, you know, usually I'm pretty cautious. So this time, I don't know, I think I let my guard down and let that guy got the remote control of my computer. So what happened was I was on the internet and suddenly there was something popping on my screen and it said that you need to call this 800
number. Never, ever, 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 ever do that, folks. When you see that pop up to call an 800 number, that is a scam. Just ignore it, close the window, and move on. There's nothing wrong with your computer. And you usually wouldn't do that, would you, Lisa? But you know, it's like no. It got you when you were vulnerable.
Right. And I at the beginning, I thought, oh, something. So I just tried to exit out, but it didn't let me close down.
No, they make it hard. You can do that with a web page. So it's just, you know, you close the browser, or if you have to, you reboot your computer. But it's not an infection by itself. It's just a web page.
Yeah, I realized it later when it was too late. But I think I still got a little brain, didn't get him.
Well, what happened? So you called the 800 number.
I did. And then the guy says, oh, okay. And it looks like from Microsoft, you know. And then with the background, with all those people phone calls.
Of course it is. Of course it is. What do you think? They're going to have a big spider and it says, call our hackers now.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be nice looking clip art of nice looking people helping you, smiling.
Right. And then the guy asked me, says, do you know anything about IP address and whatever? I said, oh, I'm not too computer savvy. I don't know these
things.
Yeah,
that's called, there's a phrase called baffling them with BS. That's what he was doing.
He was talking all these things.
Yeah, because it makes you feel like he's an expert and you're not.
Right. And then he, you know, got to me, says, okay, type this in and this and that. And then I saw on my computer, you know, the.
Yeah. So this is part of the scam. They'll always do this. They'll get you to launch something called the event viewer. And in the event viewer, it's you're looking at the log of events and there's all these entries with red X's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he says, oh, do you see any? Oh, no. What he does, he plays it cool. Okay, so tell me, do you see any, does everything look normal? Is it all green? Do you see any, you don't see any red X's, do you?
That's what he says. He says, do you feel like your computer's running slow? I said, no, I don't feel
Everybody feels like their computer's running slow. He said, no, good for you, good for you.
Yeah, and then he says, okay, look, you know, this is a, you got like almost 4,000 those errors and warnings.
That's completely normal. Every computer has that, and they know that. They know that. That's completely normal. That's why we don't normally put the event log up on the screen, because it scares people. It's meaningless. Anyway, go ahead. You know this now. Go ahead. What else? Yeah. What else? What did he do next? This is good. You're doing, Lisa, you're doing everybody a favor, because now they're hearing this. They'll remember this, and they won't fall for it.
Right. You know, after that, next day, I almost feel like call that 800 number back and telling him that you give me a free lesson. But then I thought, oh, well, better not.
You know what I do? Because I get the same call. In fact, I get the call when I'm in the car, and the guy says, oh, I see you're using your Windows computer. So what I do, and I don't know if this is effective, but I say, does your mother know that you call people and scam them?
When I get a phone call, I know that. I think probably the same people.
It's the same people, right. It's the same people. They do the same trick. Sometimes they call you, sometimes you call them. Same trick.
Right. So once this guy calls me with, you know, those heavy Indian accent. So I said, you idiot, you think I'm going to fall for you that? And the guy says, you idiot. And they hang up the phone.
Yeah, they get angry if you do that. I said, does your mother know? You should be ashamed, click.
Right. So this one, I was stupid. I fall for it because he was explaining to me. He says your IP address is like your social security. You can only have this once and this and this and that. So I said, then how did I get all infected? You know, I'm usually cautious. I don't click on links and that. And he says, oh, that's because you in some internet cafe or whatever infected you. And I said, well, then isn't that going to be vice versa? If someone coming to my house use my Wi-Fi and my IP address is already infected, well, I will infect someone else? And he says, yes.
You will infect everybody who visits you. You must fix this now. Did he ask for money?
No, then he told me, he says, oh, don't worry, we can fix it.
Oh, yeah.
He wants me to get this network access protection agent something.
How much was that?
Well, when I heard that, I stopped him. I said, you know what? I said, you know, I'm regretting letting you get into my computer. And
wait a minute now. This is an important question. Did you give him control of your computer?
It did.
So he was moving the mouse around?
Right. That's how he shows me all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's bad. Because while he's doing that, he might have been doing, we don't know, but he might have been. These scams vary. So sometimes they just want you to buy some software, and they're happy with that, and they got their $300. Or often it's a support contract for a year for $300. And that's benign because, you know, just you call the credit card company, you say, that was a scam. Please reverse the charge, and they'll do that, and you're done. The problem is, though, now he's got your credit card number. That could be a source of problems. And the real problem is, if somebody's really malicious, once they get control of your computer, it's as if you got up and left your computer and you let some stranger come in and sit down and play with it for a while. He can do anything, including put malware on there, put a keystroke logger, put a remote access Trojan that turns on your camera. There's the sky's the limit.
Right. I told him, I said, you know, I don't think I can trust you. Maybe you are the expert. And he says, well, you called us. I didn't call you. And I'm not a hacker. If I hack, I will do something. So I said, well, I think I'm still suspicious. I said,
good. However, the damage is done.
Already done, yeah. So I said, all I want is to get my computer running. Can you just fix this, and I'll call you back later. I'll buy something. And he says, well, your computer probably is already infected. It makes 2 minutes, or half
yes,
an hour.
Yes, because I just put something on your computer. it is infected already.
And then immediately I saw on the screen he was typing some password, that screen coming up.
What a jerk.
What an evil jerk.
You know what's really sad is some of these guys are actually legitimate tech support for big companies. And then, you know, the boss says, okay, you know, we're done working for Microsoft for the next 2 hours. I want you to answer calls from this number. And so they actually are sometimes support people. They may not be malicious, but you have one and only one thing you can do right now, which is wipe your computer and start over. You got to reinstall Windows.
So I did.
Good.
Then he hung up the phone. It's gone. So I turned immediately. I just forced my computer off. Turn it off.
Okay, hold on a second. I got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I mean, what the guy could do is put ransomware on your computer that triggers in a month. So the question is, Lisa, is you got rid of him, right?
Right.
But the problem is he was in your computer. So the only thing you can do at this point is to, I'm sorry to say, erase the drive and start over.
I did that. Because
you did.
Actually, while I was conversation in the middle, I told him, I said, I did a couple of times cleaning, install my computer because my software wasn't agree or something. And he says, oh, cleaning, install, it doesn't do anything, doesn't do this application damage. Don't do a cleaning, install. So he was telling me all this.
Yeah, that's a bad sign because that means he put something on there. A clean install would wipe out whatever he did to your system. So A, that's wrong. A clean install fixes everything by its very nature. But B, the fact that he doesn't want you to do that worries me.
Yeah.
That worries right. me. So tell me what you did after you got off the line to fix your computer.
I shut the computer forcefully down.
Okay.
And then later I just turned the computer on and immediate computer screen says you need some kind of a password. To turn this computer on. Wouldn't be able to turn it on.
And you didn't need that before?
No.
Oh, my God. This guy screwed you up. Wow.
Yeah. I saw him on the screen typing the password twice on the screen. And after that, he shut off.
He locked you out of your own computer.
Right. So I was really being hit. So by then, I couldn't turn on my computer, so I forced my computer off, and then I just did a clean install.
Good.
Wiped everything out.
Good. You know what you're doing. That's good. There are things that can survive a clean install, but that's very rare. You're fine now.
I hope, yeah. But the thing is, Leo, I don't know. Still right now, I'm not sure if this is a coincidence or not.
Well, it's not a coincidence. They either manipulate websites. See, what happens is generally is the website got hacked before you got hacked. The website that you were visiting got hacked to display that pop-up.
Okay.
I mean, if you were visiting a legitimate website, if you were visiting a bad guy website, well, then it didn't have to hack it. But if you're going to, like, my website and you get a pop-up like that, that's because my website got hacked. And so now, you know, this is bad. And so from now on, don't believe those pop-ups. They don't happen. That's not real. They're always a scam. Always. Make sure that you update Windows whenever there's an update. Every month at least, you know, you want to update it. Update your browser. Update anything you use to get online with. Your Adobe Reader, Adobe Flash, anything that goes online. Keep that up to date. That'll keep them from doing anything to you without your permission. And then be very careful about who you let on your computer, what programs you run. Only run programs you know they're good.
Right.
Sometimes the way they scam you is they'll say, oh, you know, we got a video of you. You can wait until you see what you did last night. And you say, oh, yikes, what did I do? And you click the link. And then it says, oh, your Flash is out of date. You need to reinstall Flash. And you go, well, that happens all the time. Okay, no problem. You click the link. Instead of installing Flash, it installs malware. So you just have to be very suspicious.
Okay. Yeah, but what I was saying coincidence was that morning I got an email from Yahoo Mail. It says you can connect all your mail to the Gmail, whatever, Yahoo Mail, something. And I did that. And I don't know. And then later I look at my Gmail. Some of my Yahoo Mail was kind of transferred to the Gmail.
Well, it sounds like. Now, was that mail claimed to be from Yahoo?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe. I don't know why Yahoo would want you to use Gmail. I have to run, but I'm glad you wiped your computer. I guess that's the bottom line here. Holy cow, Lisa. Thanks for sharing that with us. And you wonder why I tell people to get Chromebooks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I spent a little more time with Lisa during the break. The good news is she realized what she had done. Once you give somebody control of your computer
or once you run an application from a source that you don't trust, really the only sure way to have a clean computer is to format the hard drive and reinstall Windows from a known good source, preferably a disk, a DVD, right? Or if you don't have that, download the Windows Media Creation Tool from Microsoft, make a USB key on a different computer. You can't trust it anymore. It's been compromised. It's the enemy within now. And the good news is I'm really glad Lisa called, because I wanted everybody to hear that story, because that happens all the time. And not everybody is as savvy as Lisa. Lisa realized halfway through it, I've just been scammed. Most people go through the whole process, give the guy money, and in effect pay the guy to hack you. Wow. Wow. And honestly, I understand many of you need a Windows computer or a Macintosh computer. You need a general operating system because you're doing something, heavy duty with heavy duty software. You have custom software for your business or something like that. But for most people, the way we use computers, email, browse the net, buy things on the net, bank, word processing, all of those things can be done on a much safer platform, a Google Chromebook. They're made by a variety of companies. HP makes one, Lenovo, Acer, Asus. They all make Chromebooks. It's a special version of Linux that is not as barely hackable. You'd have to work really hard. You might get those pop-ups, but those guys can't do anything. Even if you called them and said, please help me, they go, well, you're on a Chromebook. I can't nothing I could do. And if for some reason something bad happens, they all have a command in the settings called PowerWash that does what Lisa just had to do manually, automatically wipes off the drive, reinstalls Chrome. It's got a protection system that keeps it from booting a bad version of Chrome or a modified version of the Chrome OS. So you're really in good shape. It's a much safer thing. It's less expensive. They have a broad variety, mostly laptops, but they have tablets, they have desktops. And you're much safer. Unless you know you need the very much more complicated general purpose operating system of Macintosh or Windows, you should probably be getting a Chromebook. Almost everybody should be using a Chromebook. Or a tablet. An iPad's fine. They've got the iPads now start at $329. This was a good move by Apple, by the way. This new iPad they just released is the least expensive iPad. And at that price, I think it's a good buy. So if you think you can do everything you need to do on an iPad, that's fine. If you want a full keyboard, if you want something a little more sophisticated, a real browser, for instance, then get a Chromebook. People should only be buying Windows or Mac if they know they need Windows or Mac. The problem is it's just the default for most people. It always has been. We haven't had good alternatives until now. Brent on the line from Rochester, New York. Hi, Brent. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, congratulations on your Webby nomination.
Hey, thank you. I'm very excited about that. I think this is – the podcasts are new to the Webbies. Webbies have been around for quite a while, awarding the best websites. And we have been nominated. I want everybody to vote. Do you mind if I give them a plug?
Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Brent. You gave me an opening. If you go to you could look at the Webby Awards and vote for the People's Voice Award for my show Triangulation, which is the interview show I do every week. But I also have a special URL. We'll put the link in the show notes. But if you've got a pen, twit.to, that's our URL shortener, twit.to/Webbies2017. And your vote is much appreciated. Thank you. What can I do for you, Brent?
Okay, well, generally I use Windows, and I put it in high contrast mode in your previous caller who was having trouble reading the web page. Yeah. The shift all print screen will flip you that way. And I've been trying to use Linux Mint in a virtual machine on Windows, but the problem is that all the menus have white backgrounds, which just about kills my eyes because I'm visually impaired.
Right. So you want dark backgrounds, yeah. Yeah.
And I saw you had Arch Linux running yesterday on the Tech Guy, and I saw that you actually had black backgrounds on those, which is really kind of what I need. But did that come from the GNOME, or was that part of Arch?
Yeah, all versions of Linux, as far as I know, will offer you a way to do a dark background. So that is, you know, this is just a customization. This is one of the reasons I actually like Linux a lot is, you know, it's also one of the reasons other people don't is because it's highly tweakable. So I'm using GNOME, which is going to be the new desktop on Ubuntu, but you could do it in almost any desktop environment. In this case, GNOME has tweaks, a tweaks tool, and you see right there, global dark theme. You could turn it on or off, and you can make it darker. You can control this completely in Linux. That's one of the nice things about Linux. It's a geek operating system. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's easier on the eyes. I don't like white backgrounds. Now, websites is a little different because generally the browser will defer to the website and let it do whatever it wants. The website decides, you know, whether you should have a white background or not. So at our Tech Guy Lab sites, we have kind of an off-white background, but that might be too bright even for you. In which case, that's a case where you would want to modify the normal style sheet and say, no, I want – this is a little bit harder to do, but I want dark backgrounds on websites as well.
So it's a lot harder to do because it's a white background on that particular menu.
Of course it is. Why would they make it easy? There is a Chrome extension that you might like that's called Dark Mode for Google. It turns the Google page, which is by default white, dark. And that's a good start, right? And by the way, one of the advantages of dark on many systems is that you're going to use less battery life. It's not as bright. So there's also Dark Reader, which is designed for Chrome. And I think this probably changes more sites. I think this changes the style sheet for you. So if you use Chrome as a browser, try the Dark Reader Chrome extension.
I use a high contrast extension, but that doesn't always do what I want it to.
Sometimes, you know, this is that same conversation we had earlier, which is that websites are not, you know, as sensitive as they ought to be. In Mac OS, by the way, the chat room's telling me, thank you, WP788, you go to System Preferences, General, check Use Dark Menu Bar and Dock. So you could do that. I understand. You know, it's funny. When we redesigned our website, a lot of people complained our site had a white background. You're not alone. It's not merely people with low vision and no vision. It's actually just people who, some of them have their screen set too bright. Which is a very common thing. And it's just, they say, it burns. It may also be a lot of people don't get out much. I don't know. But
the other issue would also be trying to find an editor that has a dark background. I'm using Lighttable right now in Linux, which I put in a dark theme, but they colorize text. So if you put blue text on a black background,
you can't read that. There's also apparently an add-on for Firefox and Chrome called Stylish you might check out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll do a bunch of links on the website.
That'd be great. Yeah. Customizing the profiles and stuff can be a real pain on an editor and stuff.
Yeah. It's hard to do, you know, globally. You often have to end up doing stuff bit by bit. Stylish is cool because it's custom themes for any website, so you can say I want dark websites. That's kind of a neat idea. And then
Notepad Plus on Windows gives me exactly what I needed,
right?
But I don't have that on Linux.
Right. This Stylish is from userstyles.org, which is cool. They allow you, they have a whole bunch of themes. So like, let's say you don't like Facebook, you want it to be dark. They have a dark Facebook theme that you can install with Stylish. So Facebook will suddenly be dark from now on, things like that.
That's, Stylish, all right.
Stylish looks really good.
Link.
Yeah. Userstyles.org.
Okay.
But I'll put a link to all of this at Tech Guy Labs.
Beautiful.
Hey, thanks for a good call. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Good luck with your Webby.
Thank you. Glad I could get a plug in. Our show today brought to you by, this is a great new service. New to me. I guess they've been around for some time, actually, called Captera. Have you heard of Captera? So the idea is, and it happens to all the time on the radio show, somebody says, what's the best accounting software? My boss wants me to know. I need a report on Monday. Or they'll, say, hey, I'm desperate. I've got to find a print program that'll do. Where do I find good software? Who do I trust? And I am now going to say Capterra, CAPTERRA.com. You got into business, to do your job, not to worry about things like tracking applicants or help desk or maintenance or medical practice or CRM. You want to know, though, let's say you're a physician, you want to know what's the best software out there for a medical practice. Well, Capterra's got it. They've got 400-plus categories: business continuity, content marketing, file sharing, human resources, web analytics. Every page has ratings and vetted reviews from real customers. And you know what's great about this? It's free. If you've got to prepare a report for your boss, here's the top four applications in medical management. You got it at Capterra. No obligation, no registration even. It's absolutely free. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twit. And you can even narrow it down. So number of users. So I'm looking at the medical management software. Let's say you've got a small medical office. Do you want it to be web-based or on your hard drive? What do you need to manage? Claims, prescriptions? Does it have to be HIPAA compliant? And on and on. And that's for one category. It does this for 400 different categories. If you are in business and you need to find software to help you do your business, you need Capterra. This is brilliant. It'll save me a lot of time. I mean, look, I'll just do the A's: A/B testing, accounting, accounts payable and receivable, admissions, advertising agency, affiliate, alumni management, apparel management, app. This is just the A's, and there's lots more: architecture, audit, auto dealer. If you're in a business and you need software, Capterra.com/twit. It's free. CAPTERRA.com. And those vetted reviews really help you narrow down on the right program for you. Capterra.com/twit. Thank you for their support of the Tech Guy Podcast. He's got his own theme music. That's your custom theme music for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Joins us every week to help us take better digital pictures. He's also a film camera buff, but we won't talk about that on the Tech Guy Show, right, Chris? How you doing,
no,
Chris?
I don't think we want to. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am great. I'm getting excited because I'm going on vacation in a couple of months in June to the Galapagos Islands, and I know that that's a photographer's paradise.
Oh, yes. Wildlife, more than you can handle.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm really excited. And, you know, I'm playing with all the cameras, trying to figure out which one I want to bring, which lenses I want to bring, all that stuff.
That's exactly what you need to do.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I want to talk about today.
Oh, good.
Spring is here, right?
Yep.
It's getting warmer. The weather's getting nicer. The light is getting nicer. And everyone is kind of getting to that point where they want to take their cameras, right? I think you're much more inclined now to take the camera out than in November. So, of course, like playing the guitar or like, I don't know, skateboarding, things need practice, right?
Yep.
And photography is not an exception here. It's pretty much the same with photography. Even though it seems like, okay, I just pressed a button and I take the picture. But I want to talk about three things, like exercises that can help people kind of get back into that groove, back into that thing where they take the camera and where they get better with photography. The first one is more a general one. The second one is more on the creative side. And the third one is more about keeping that ball rolling.
I'm ready. I'm taking notes right now.
The general thing is, and that's very simple, pick up your camera every day. That's pretty much it. I mean, and if it's only for 5 minutes, that's plenty. Take a few shots around the house. Get outside, take a walk, go in the garden, find some nice flowers or something that interests you. Especially if something interests you, you will probably shoot nicer pictures of it anyway. And that will help you make sure that, a few basic things. If you do this every day, it'll help you make sure that the batteries are charged in your camera.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll help you make sure it has a memory card in it. Pretty much make sure the camera's ready to go all the time. And that will take away the major excuse to leave the camera home. Like, it's not ready. It's not charged. I don't have a card in. So remove those obstacles by taking that camera out every day and taking photos. And if it's just 5 minutes, that's fine. But you kind of stay in that groove. So that's the first thing. And I'm pretty sure you're doing this.
I am. I'm trying to get in the habit of having my camera on my shoulder everywhere I go, just like all the time.
Sounds perfect.
I kind of want to do that.
The second one is a very simple creative exercise that will probably help a lot of people who don't really consciously think about taking when they take a photo what they do there. A lot of people just take the camera and point it in the general direction and press a button. But a very, very simple one, field of frame with whatever you want to shoot. It's very simple. It's very effective. If the frame is not filled with what you want to shoot, just get a bit closer. Zoom a bit in. If in doubt, get closer. If you make that a habit for most of your shots, that will just teach you so many things. Like, for example, it will kind of force you into thinking about what you want to shoot when you take that photo, right? Often it's like there's lots of stuff in the frame that doesn't really help. By filling that frame, you will remove a lot of distraction from the frame and your photos will become better. So second one, fill the frame. And the third one is one thing that, well, I do this. I know a few other photographers who do this. And it's, again, another thing that can help you kind of keep that ball rolling. I try to do good compositions. I try to think about what I compose for every single shot I take. That includes when I shoot something like as mundane as a price tag in a shop with my iPhone. I will think about what's the background behind it? Is it distracting? I will treat almost every photo like it's an important picture, even though it isn't. I'll try to make sure the exposure is nice. I try to make sure the focus is right. I try to compose that shot, even if it's kind of a throwaway shot. It's not necessary to do this, but it is practice. It gives you practice with every single shot, even with those that are not important. That's pretty much the three things I do.
I got to put this on an index card and paste it to my forehead or something, because I want to be ready for June. I don't want to be thinking, oh, how do I do that setting, or where's my lens cap? What happened to my bat? All I want to mess with that stuff, right?
And you can do all the three. You can do the general one, the pick up your camera every day. You can do that now. If you're at the moment you're in Galapagos, you will. The wildlife is so tame there that you can get close up, so you can feel the frame even with.
Yeah. I don't have to bring a really long telephoto lens. You know, when you go on a safari in Africa, you bring a long telephoto lens because you're not going to get.
I think it
kind of
depends, but. But you will have the chance to get close, to get close. And the third one, again, every single shot counts, even the ones that you would throw away, even the price tag shots. Just make it a habit to think about what you're shooting there.
Yeah.
And make it nice.
Yeah.
That's a good, good thing to keep the ball rolling.
We have another trick that gets you taking pictures and gets you involved with this show, which is our monthly assignments. Chris comes up with a word that's just a concept that we don't give you a lot of detail, and you just kind of use that as a guide to taking images. And then if you've got something you like, you can upload it to Flickr, show it off to friends, get comments, and submit it to our tech guy group. Once you do, Renee Silverman, our moderator, will say, oh, thank you. And it'll be in the pile of photos that Chris will review. I guess we're coming pretty close to our review. We're going to do it next week or the week after?
I think a couple more weeks.
Okay, so you got two more weeks. What is our concept, our word for the month?
The word is turn.
And turn.
I looked this up. It has at least 20 different meanings. So
he likes that.
It should make it easy for everyone to find something, and it should also make for a nice variety of photos.
So the reason this works, it's not a, you know, there's no prize, it's not a competition, but it just gives you a little incentive. Well, maybe we already gave you the incentive to go out and take some pictures today, but now you've got an assignment. You've got something to look for, something to illustrate turn, and I'm sure you'll find something. And then put turn in the comment on the picture, you know, so you know, the tag, so we'll know what that is when you submit it. And in a couple of weeks, Chris will pick a few different pictures and illustrate them. I know you lead photo workshops all year long. Do you send out an email before the workshop telling your participants this kind of information?
It kind of depends on the kind of workshop, but with some of them, I actually send out an email and tell them to bring the five best pictures they've ever taken.
Oh, I like that.
In some cases, people get really, really like frightened.
That's a scary assignment.
They have never
really
thought about this. It is a scary assignment because a lot of people have never thought about this before. But that's the moment when you have to start to like look at your own photos and go, which one's better and why is it better? And as soon as you start asking about the why, that's when you grow. That's when you become a better photographer.
Yeah, what makes this a good picture? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Very nice. Chris Marquardt, you'll find more of his work, pictures and so forth, on Flickr. He's Nubui, Nubui. I don't know why. We've never asked. Maybe I don't want to know. No one knows. Flickr.com/NUBUI. But you can also go to his website, chrismarquardt.com. Or, you know, if you go to discoverthetopfloor.com, that's where his workshops are. And you have links there, right, to photos and everything else?
Everything is linked, cross-linked, so you won't get lost there.
I highly recommend it. If you like this segment, it's a short version of a show he does, a wonderful show called Tips from the Top Floor. You can download it for free on the internet, and it really is good. Tips from the Top Floor. And that's also at discoverthetopfloor.com. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Liam.
Everybody, we're all going to take pictures of Tern today, right? All right. I could think of a few. Not T-E-R-N, though. T-U-R-N. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Thank you, Chris. That was a coincidence. I didn't know what you were going to talk about.
It was a good fit.
I just happened to mention that because I'm getting excited.
By the way, this video is coming in over IPDTL.
Oh, it looks good.
And I think that's the first time in ages that I'm widescreen.
Oh, you're right.
It's looking.
We're
so
very
much
happy
now.
With this. It does require, really well. Particularly. It does seem like the good bandwidth makes a big difference. So not all of our hosts does it work with, but when it works, it does work better. So you like this?
Oh, it worked so much better than Skype.
Yeah.
Skype was always changing the bandwidth. And it was changing the resolution.
Yeah.
It was always
the lip sync's perfect.
Unpredictable.
God, you know, it's amazing. I wish we all had the bandwidth you have in Germany. You know, I talk to people next door who don't have as good bandwidth as you do thousands of miles away. It's amazing.
I think I'm sending 2.8 megabits.
Yeah, that's plenty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks great.
Working good.
I see more detail. Yeah, no, I should have known. It looks fantastic. Good.
I should tidy up now, right?
Yeah, no, it looks great.
All right.
IPDTL is a service we're trying out. I think we're going to use it in addition to Skype whenever we can. It does make a difference.
Yes.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thanks, Chris.
All right.
See
you again next week.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Debbie from Calabasas, California. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for hanging on. I appreciate it.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I had scanned some old family photos onto an ancient zip drive, the Omega Zip 100.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
See if I can look at those, and obviously I can't get anything to. I can get it to plug into. I have one Windows 7, an older computer.
So it's USB your zip drive?
No, that's the problem. It's got
parallel. It's the parallel port.
Yeah, remember those.
So you can buy a converter that will convert parallel port to USB. My suggestion is you pull everything off of those discs.
Oh yeah.
Put it on something a little bit more modern. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are companies that will do this too, by the way.
Well, so I did actually see that.
Yeah.
And I found one that had, which gave me a sense of security, it had like five different offices, one in like New York, Los Angeles, et cetera, San Diego.
Good.
And then I actually was just looking on Amazon, and I saw that they have some used ones that are like, what would you call them?
Cheap?
USB.
Oh, no, USB.
$130.
Yeah, no, they made USB. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that zip disks went away Well, one main reason was hard drives got really big, fast, and cheap.
I got a terrible fortune.
Because right these, are only, what, 100 megabyte disks.
Yeah.
But there was a little problem. And if you got a damaged disk, it was damaged in a certain way. It could ruin the drive, and then the drive could ruin all your other disks, and you'd have this really horrendous cascade of damage. Mm. It was called the click of death.
I just stopped using it.
Well, and a good thing. But here's the reason I mention it is the risk that you could buy a zip drive, used zip drive, and that zip drive could actually damage your disks. Mm. And those are too precious to... to lose. So my suggestion is to, if it's not horribly expensive, the other reason is you're going to spend $100 on this zip drive and never use it again, I hope.
Correct. Yes.
I hope. But it's more than $100 to get the disks read. Is that the case?
Well, no. It wasn't a bad price. It was essentially, I think they would do like almost 5 gig for... it was cheap as $10.
I would do it if you trust them. First of all, if they're going to make sure they don't have the click of death.
Yeah.
Because that would be death to their business if they had to tell people, oh, I'm sorry, we just ruined your disk.
And they did have a good Yelp kind of review.
Good reviews. Good.
Yeah.
What was the name of the company?
Oh, it's on my other computer.
Okay,
I walked away
that's
from
fine.
It.
But no, that's fine.
No, it was.
I would do that rather than buy a zip drive.
Yeah, well, that's what, and it's $100, and I will never use it again because obviously it's
useless. Yeah. You know, it's so funny because I use this as an example of how you, it's a hypothetical example of how you really got to be careful about maintaining the data format you're using, because these things go expire, and the zip disk isn't that old. I mean, that's less than 20 years old.
Right.
But it might as well be written in Sumerian.
Yeah, exactly.
it's old history. So I always mention zip disks. I know a lot of people have them, but you're the first one I've ever talked to who actually still has some zip disks.
I know. Well, and like I was going to do a memory book for somebody who's 90, and thought, I've got those old photos I scanned from way back when, and I thought I'd use those.
Nice.
Now,
do you have the originals?
I do, and I do have a nice scanner.
One other thought. Yeah. Because I guarantee you, your nice scanner now is a lot better than the one you used with that zip disk.
Oh, sure. I'm sure. Yeah.
What I worry about is you're going to get them off the zip disk and go, these are terrible. I thought it was good at the time, but this is awful.
Not compared to what we have now.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
So you may be your better bet. I mean, I don't know. Is it thousands of pictures?
It's hundreds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. But you might, you know what you could price is, what would it cost for the same service to scan those photos instead of recover the zip disks?
Oh, and it does. And I just pulled it up. It's DVD Your Memories. And this is a Los Angeles store.
Yeah.
And
I don't know them, but I think you could try, if the reviews are good, you could trust them. This is, and what these companies do is they keep all these old drives and stuff because this is a business.
Yeah.
It's a good business. There's people with zip disks out there.
Yeah. No, and they do everything.
So you might consider, if you know what the quality is on the zip disk, you could look at it. But if you don't, you might be recovering something you don't really want. Maybe better to rescan them.
Right.
And the other thing these companies do is they will clean those pictures up often. They will, they'll tidy them.
And I think I did at that point. I had a nice scanner at that time, not compared to what this is. And I think I used Photoshop way back when and did clean them up.
All right.
But I think, yes, but I like your idea of, because I'm good at scanning, but I want to make sure that I haven't lost any of those old photos compared to
Point.
Yeah,
that's a good point. You may have scanned stuff that you no longer have. Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Yeah, get them off that zip disk. Those zip disks will not last forever. The media is going to start to decay and flake. So it's time to do it now.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Great call.
I appreciate your help.
Thanks for your question. There are a number of companies that scan. I've used Scan Cafe. They're a national company that does. I don't know if they have zip drive recovery, but they do have photo scanning. Scan My Photos is another company that does this. And, you know, in the past I've done this with the locals, because I wanted to hand carry stuff in. And so if your local photo store may well do this as well. The click of death. This is actually a little inside baseball here, but the way I met my good friend and one of our podcast hosts, Steve Gibson. He discovered the click of death. He wrote a program called Trouble in Paradise that would find drives of the click of death, diagnose it before they damaged all your discs. Ed in North Carolina. Hi, Ed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Ed. Thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, I'm on speakerphone here. Let me get you off.
Okay.
I've been listening to you about 30 years or so, probably ever since you've been on the air.
Nice. It's great to talk to you. Been doing this a long darn time, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we've pretty much aged together.
In lockstep.
My wife is a big-time lover of you, too. She's
really?
A tech guy that you'll listen to.
Yeah. You know, it goes both ways. There are wives who like me, and there are wives who really don't.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how often their husband watches you.
Exactly. We call them long-suffering spouses around here.
Yes, sir.
What can I do with you? Anyway, for you.
Okay. I live in a small town in North Carolina now. It's Plymouth, North Carolina. It's halfway between Greenville, North Carolina, and Roanoke, Island.
I've been to Greenville. Love Greenville. Beautiful, beautiful part of the country.
Anyway, what I would like to do is set up a delivery service here in a small town. Now, we have two ISPs here. However, I'm supposed to be getting of the cable provider. I'm supposed to be getting 60 megabits per second. I just tested that I'm getting almost 10.
Ugh.
And the other ISP is a DSL, and they only offer 10
right.
megabits per second, okay? Well, the problem is if either one would be fine if they were dependable.
Right.
All right, having a delivery service, you have to be, I mean, most of my work would be done online. You know, people go on.
So you'd be at home taking orders or whatever. You're not mobile doing this. You're doing it at home?
No,
or an office?
It'll be in an office.
Yeah, but you're in a land. You're on land. You're not driving around. You don't need mobile internet. You need the land internet.
Right. Exactly.
You should inquire. There, I'm almost certain this is the case, and your phone company probably could offer it, but maybe even the cable company. Almost all of them have business class that has something called an SLA, a service level agreement, a guarantee of good service. And they charge more for it, a lot more for it. But that's usually what businesses do. In fact, in many cases, it's what they're supposed to do. The consumer internet your cable company offers probably is not, it's, you know, licensed for business use. So that's one thing to do is inquire. And there may be other companies that don't do home internet that you've never heard of that offer leased lines and higher quality internet. Typically, businesses will use that. And then, of course, you can also, you know, more and more people are doing this, consider using the bandwidth from your mobile carriers, the LTE bandwidth, which is quite good. Mobile carriers tend to keep that reliable. I've never experienced a dropout on those. They're more expensive, and they often have bandwidth caps. But for business use, absolutely inquire about what business providers there are. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We use at home and here at work, we have business class service. And typically, they'll have more uptime, more consistent bandwidth because they have an agreement with you to provide that. And so they pay more attention to that.
Listen, this whole town has been out of
service. Is it a pretty small town?
There's only 3,500 people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you may not have that as an option then. Well, okay, then try the LTE. Do you have good cell service there?
Outstanding. We have three the top level service providers.
There you go.
As far as cell phones go.
There you go.
And that was my question, is that I need something where, you know, the ideal situation would be is like Google Cloud printing, but however, I want that automatic. I mean, so when I got because my software going to use is I get an order and it's going to go, I can put it over either email or SMS.
Okay.
Okay, but the thing is, I want it to print out automatically because I don't want to have to sit on a cell phone or pay people to sit on there, print, you know. So if I could have something that would do it automatically from cell phone, that would be the ideal situation.
So if you want to use LTE, you don't have to use a cell phone. You can use a computer.
Okay.
Your cell provider will make and offer I call them a MiFi. That used to be the brand name, but they're credit card sized devices that use LTE bandwidth, and then it's Wi-Fi to a computer. You can have up to five devices connected. That's so your computer, and your computer can be made to automatically print it, right?
Well, yeah, you could. I mean, Microsoft Word does that, and
There's ways to get on it. It's easier on a computer than it is on a phone. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
So that's what I would suggest. I don't think you want to use your phone for the bandwidth, but you can use LTE internet. And again, you should check with the carrier, make sure it's okay to use it for business, blah, blah, blah. The biggest issue you're going to have is bandwidth caps, you know. But it doesn't sound like you're going to be using a lot of bandwidth, really. These are just going to be emails, basically, right?
Right, exactly. Emails or SMS.
Yeah. So that's both. But SMS, I get it. So there are ways also to receive SMSs on your computer that came from your phone. There's programs like Mighty Text.
Yeah, I do that.
You already do that, or Google Hangouts. So, and I don't know how you'd get those to print, but I'm sure there's a way to, you know, script that out. So that's what I would suggest, is use a computer as opposed to a phone as your receiver. They're even companies that make routers. They look like your regular internet router, but they support self bandwidth.
You can get dust phones that have, dust phones.
Yeah.
And I would have, I would have a couple of those as well.
Yeah. But that's how I would do it. If you have unreliable landline internet service. See, the carriers are national, and once they get a tower up, they're going to be pretty reliable. If you've got a good signal, I think that's probably the best. You're right. That's probably the best way to do it. And the bandwidth cap's not going to be an issue, because you're not. It's not a high bandwidth application.
Right. I am not going to, do either one.
That's what I would suggest. Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good workaround there.
Yeah. Long as I don't, because some of the stuff I'll be delivering is for hospitals and that kind of stuff.
Got it. So you have to be online. You cannot be unreliable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to, at the very least, answer a phone.
Yeah.
When you go with these and at least even the phone company here. I mean, what has happened is the town has grown, for their cables and
the state of internet in rural America is really kind of shameful.
I mean, the people here are happy with it because they're just thankful that they have it.
They're just glad there's so many places that don't.
They have it 2 hours a day. They're jumping for joy.
And you got a choice. You got two whole providers, so you're well ahead of a lot of other rural areas in that regard. Anyway,
right.
Yeah, it's really. I think we have to address this. The FCC used to have a broadband plan that included government financing for getting internet into rural areas, because the premise was, nowadays you have to have the internet to participate in the economy.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah. So people who don't have internet are really struggling.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the and a lot of that has to do with job growth. I mean,
precisely. And we've done a bad job of keeping rural America working, and this is a very important part of that, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
because I mean, everything here is got to come out of a major airport. The closest major airport we have from to us is 100 miles away. So when you do away with that kind of stuff, then prices go up because delivery charges go through the roof.
Right.
And the trucking companies depend on them, and everybody depends on them. But that's a whole another story. But and like Amazon, for instance, they can't get their stuff to where they want to.
Right.
Because there's nothing there.
Right.
Okay.
Well, good luck. It sounds like you've got it sounds like you found a good a need.
Oh, yeah.
A good business.
I know I've got the need, but if I can get the communications right, that's my problem.
All right, man, and this
I don't
is
go,
in an in
a side a contract with a hospital company and then
right.
not be able to get a hold of me.
In
you know?
A nutshell, this is why we got to get internet up to speed in rural America. So important.
Like I said, it's not only internet, it's also the infrastructure, the telephone lines.
Yeah.
Because they're just all eaten up. And,
internet will replace the telephone lines. I mean, everything will be wireless at some point.
at some point, but who knows how long that'll be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, so. I know. I mean, we, you know, I don't know what the current plan is.
While we're talking about that, I got another question for you, too.
Yes.
Why aren't you on TiVo? Why don't you ever subscribe to them to put your show on TiVo?
It's up to them, and we've actually approached them to get on TiVo, but they haven't done it. So it's not.
They hound them.
I think we're hounding them. I would love to be on TiVo. The thing is, there's so many other ways to get us now that I don't worry about that so much. But TiVo stopped doing podcasts. Mike B's telling me they don't do podcasts anymore. That's right. The new TiVo software really changed how it works.
Well, I can watch on YouTube, you know.
Yeah, we're on YouTube Live. So if you've got YouTube, you just go to youtube.com/twit and you can watch us.
You're on YouTube. I didn't know you did YouTube Live.
Yeah, we're both live and on demand. So go to youtube.com/twit. Everything's there, including the live stream. You can watch this right now.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call.
I'm sitting here on my computer and every so often getting a big circle around, you know. So
have a great day, Ed.
You too.
Take care. Bye bye.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will begin at 6.
I remember that new software came out. TiVo really stripped back. That's right. Yeah. Is this me and Steve? Oh, this is the sound. Yeah. Oh. As soon as you hear that. You know that disc is damaged, and if you put it in another zip drive, it'll break it. I bet you if I search for, I can't do it right now. Trouble in Paradise, I could find it. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking computers. We're talking the internet. We're talking home theater. We're talking digital photography, smartphones, cutting the cord, you know, the cable cord, internet television, augmented reality, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Love to hear from you. Let's talk high tech. What do you say? Moving on to Michelle in Ohio. Hello, Michelle.
Hello.
Thanks for your patience.
Sure. So here's my question. I have a Dell computer.
Yep.
A few years old.
Yep.
And I have an Okidata printer that is probably 12 years old.
Oh, man. Is it dot matrix?
Oh, no. It's a laser.
Okay, because I had the old Okis that were... Oh, good. All right. All right. So you got an Okidata laser printer.
Laser. Color laser printer.
Ooh, fancy.
Yes, because I do freelance work, and I got tired of the inkjets.
Yeah.
You know.
If you do a lot of printing, it's cheaper to do laser, and they can do a great job, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the whole point. We kind of spent a little few extra dollars and got this laser printer and been great for years.
Let me guess, though. It has a parallel port on the back of it.
Oh, no.
Oh, good. It's USB.
So, yeah, I'm, internet, yeah, USB. Yeah.
Good, good.
Yeah, so I'm good there. But the problem is, since we our Dell computer updated to Windows 10.
You say that as if it did it all by itself. Did it do it all by itself? It just says, I'm going to update now. I'm tired of this Windows 7. I want to be at 10.
Yes, I don't know.
You know, no, it did. In many cases, it did. But you accepted the invitation for the free upgrade. Now, here's the question. Does the Okidata have a Windows 10 driver?
Right.
Probably not, because it's so old. Okidata gave up. They said, nobody's going to want to use this with Windows 10. We won't have to write a new driver.
Right. And I've spoke with Okis tech service, and they've walked me through several times, and it's like, okay, so...
So they say their old driver should work?
Their old driver should work. I've been on the phone with them. They walk me through it. I install it, print the test page. I go to a, you know, open a regular document, print. It's beautiful. Everything works again.
Yeah.
2 days later, I sit down, and suddenly my printer is no longer connected, and I have to, like, go through this reinstallation process. Now, today, my new fun thing is I can print a test page till the cows come home, but I can't print anything else.
So here's the deal. The test page is printed directly from the printer. It's not generated on the computer. It's in the printer.
In many cases.
And that might be why, while I can print a test page, it can't print something you're sending it from the computer. Sounds like a communications issue.
Okay, yeah. Well, that would help explain, because when I did get into, like, properties and, you know, tell me about this computer, it says that the printer, it says it's not connected.
Yeah, okay. However, you were able to print a test page, of course, because,
sure.
Yeah, so it's a connectivity issue. Have you tried different USB ports on your computer, like, just to see?
You know, actually, I haven't.
Might try that.
Okay.
Remember that with USB printers, you install the software before you install the printer. You connect the printer, right? So you might disconnect the printer, uninstall the Oki software, then not connect the printer first, but install the software first. Because the idea is, then when you plug in the USB thing, the Windows 10 says, oh, I see a new USB device. Let me check. Do I have a driver for it? Oh, I do. And then it installs the driver. So you have to install the software, then plug in the printer.
Oh, all right.
That's true for all USB devices. So one way that you might fix this is disconnect the USB cable on the computer for the printer. Mm-hmm. Uninstall, like remove the Oki Data software. Make sure you have the latest software. And I'm looking, and it looks like Oki does support, even for some of its dot matrix printers, does support Windows 10, believe it or not. They've got a Windows 10 compatibility chart that looks pretty good. So make sure you get the latest driver for your printer. Download it from the Oki site. Don't plug in the printer.
Okay.
Install the software, then cross your fingers, turn around three times. If you've got a chicken, you can shake it around your head, and then plug in the USB cable from the printer. If all goes well, you'll hear boom, boom, Windows 10, boom, boom, and it'll say, it'll see a little bubble that says installing driver, and let's hope that this time it'll stick.
Right. Okay.
If it doesn't, I don't know. You know, I mean, you're using a 12-year-old printer. Oki, I'm surprised Oki even gave you the time of day. That, you know what? Credit Oki for that. That's
what I said.
You know, I would have said, oh, lady, you got to get a new printer. You got to get a new printer. That's an old printer. I can't support that.
Yeah.
Actually, you might want to wait just in case. In the next few days, Windows is going to push out a big update to Windows 10. It's going to be the Creators Update. It's supposed to come out tomorrow. And it may screw everything up.
That's kind of what happened last time.
Right. The Insiders Update was a terrible, the Anniversary Update was a terrible update last August.
Mm-hmm.
But we hope this Creators Update won't be the same thing. But it's probably a good idea. In fact, everybody listening, be a prudent thing when you get offered it. And you may not get offered it tomorrow. They roll it out slowly. But when you get offered it, just to wait and see if people are howling in pain.
Right.
Before you install it. And conversely, it could fix it. It could say, oh, I see there was a problem with Oki printers. Let's fix it. So you just don't know.
Sure. Okay.
But I would always defer those big updates like that.
Yes. Great advice. I normally do defer those things.
Yeah.
Hey, one other quick question while I was starting to get on the computer and be ready for this phone call. I suddenly got this message that says, you know, computer is low on memory and
Reserve
memory, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
And I literally have no programs open.
Did it say memory or storage? Is it drive space?
No, because here, when I check my, it said memory.
Oh.
Say storage. Because
yeah, that's
when I
RAM.
Drive, yeah. When I check my drive, I have 860 gigabytes available.
You're fine on the drive. What? Yeah. So when it says memory, how old is this computer? It's a pretty old computer. If you could,
oh, no, it's like.
Can't be that old.
No, it's not that old.
So it has 4 gigs of RAM?
Easily. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting that you're getting that pop-up. That's interesting. That may also be related to the printer problem.
Okay.
Because one of the things it would unload is the print spooler. If it was running out of memory, it's going to try to unload things that you're not using.
Oh.
The reason I ask is a lot of times you get a low space message. It means your hard drive's filling up.
Exactly. Right.
But this is, but I've rarely seen, I don't think I've ever seen a low memory.
Yeah.
Low memory. Try rebooting.
Okay. Yeah, I actually did several times because as soon as I would, like, click on Google or try to, you know, even Internet Explorer, suddenly my screen would go black and the arrow would still be there.
Oh,
and
this
it would
is
just,
bad. This sounds like you have a driver that has what we call a memory leak. It allocates memory and doesn't release it. And so it over time chews up more and more of your memory till you run out. That is a bad thing. And it doesn't have to be something running. There's not a program running.
Right.
But the drivers are all running, and that's usually where you get problems is these drivers. So make sure you've – this is a case where before – day after tomorrow, before the April 11th, update. Get everything updated on that computer. And make sure you have the latest drivers for all the hardware you're using, not just the Oki data but everything else. Sounds like there's something wrong with one of your drivers, and it's chewing up memory. That's very unusual, but it would be a cause for concern. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Weird. Haven't had a problem like that in a long time. So, yeah, I would, because you're not running a program, I'd guess. You know, if you were running, your browser isn't open though, right? Nothing's open.
No, nothing was open.
Okay, so that's got to be a driver, and those are all run. You know, as soon as you boot up.
Right.
That's interesting. That's probably a bad sign.
That's what I thought.
Probably. You know, this might be a time when you upgraded to Windows 10, you upgraded what we call upgraded in place. You put it on top of the old Windows. This might be a good time to do a clean update.
Okay. That was
You know how to do that?
A thought.
And
well,
you can download the Windows 10 from Microsoft. Don't get it from anywhere else. And because that machine is already authenticated for Windows 10, you won't have to go through extra steps. It will automatically say, you don't need a serial number anymore. It will automatically say, oh, yeah. And it'll install for you.
Okay.
You have what's called an entitlement. You're entitled to Windows 10, and Microsoft knows that. So back up your data, reinstall. That is going to fix a lot of problems. Might fix this Oki data problem. Should fix that memory problem.
Okay. Great.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you this week. Oh, I'm loving this. Kind of a new sponsor, but an old friend, Square. You know about Square? Square payment system? I love Square. Square is, I first discovered Square when Jack Dorsey created it. And you know, it's kind of a neat story. He went into a hacker space and built the first Square card reader. That was the one that plugged into your iPhone, right? And you could take credit cards. I didn't even need a card reader. I wasn't taking payments, but I thought, this is the coolest thing ever. So I immediately sent for my Square. That was some years ago. Square's come a long way, baby. They are now one of the premier systems for taking credit card payments. Anywhere, any way your customers want to pay. And, of course, now we've come along. We've got not just swipes, but we've got chip and PIN. Of course, Square supports that. Easy, reliable hardware. The free MagStripe reader still around. Plugs right in the headset jack on your smartphone or tablet. You could swipe cards the old-fashioned way. But, of course, nowadays, there are certain phones don't have a headphone jack anymore. Don't worry. The new Square reader, $49, accepts chip cards and NFC, tap-to-pay payments. Compatible with iOS, Android. It uses a Bluetooth LE. So you don't have to worry about not having a headphone jack. And if you've got an iPad and you want to do point-of-sale, you slip your iPad into the Square stand, and you've got a complete point-of-sale system. Boom, just like that. Boom. It takes minutes to sign up. You'll be able to accept every major credit card. And the rates are simple. How many times that people say, oh, don't use that credit card, it costs me too much? Not with Square. No matter what the credit card, 2.75% per swipe, dip, or tap. If you want to key in transactions, a little bit more, 3.5% plus 15 cents. But 2.75, that's a great price for all credit cards. They'll create custom pricing packages if you've got a big business, annual revenues of over $250,000, and an average ticket size of over $15. They can do a custom solution for you that's even better. Never any hidden fees or penalties or commitments. You just pay for what you use. And Square pays out fast. They deposit your money within 1 to 2 business days. And if you need it, on-demand deposits can cost just 1% of the total deposit amount. Square's also got your back with $250 in chargeback protection every month. That's nice. Free. That was free. Did I mention free? Check your sales on the Square dashboard using your PC or iOS app. See historical and real-time sales data, track inventory, send marketing campaigns, create loyalty campaigns, and more. And, of course, Square works with all your favorite services, QuickBooks or Weebly or BigCommerce, and they've got their own API. So if you're one of those wise guys who likes to do your own custom programming, you can do that too. Best security, best customer support, happy customers, happy users, Square. Try it right now. Square.com/tech guy. Hey, this is a good deal. Square.com/tech guy. You get free processing on your first $500. That's nice. Some terms apply. Square.com/tech guy. Wow. So you can try Square basically for free. Give it a try. Why not? Thank you, Square, for supporting the Tech Guy show. Square.com/tech guy. Archandra, you don't need to plug in a Square on an iPhone 7 Plus. It uses Bluetooth LE. That's the new Square reader. But if you've got a phone, I wanted to say older, but almost every other phone has a headphone jack. If you've got a phone with a headphone jack, the old Square reader will work in there too. And that's free. Bluetooth LE, baby. It's magic. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's what Microsoft told everybody with Windows 10. Everything's going to get easier, child. It's going to be brighter. It's going to be beautiful. And now we got the big update. This is Microsoft says now, this is interesting, actually, that Windows 10 is the last version of Windows. Windows is no longer software you buy. It comes with your computer, and that's it. You don't have to buy the next. There'll be no Windows 11 here. No updates. That's it. Well, oh no, there will be updates, but there's no, like, you don't have to go to the store and get the new version. Actually, it makes sense because generally that's how Windows is upgraded. Most people don't upgrade Windows. They buy a new computer, right? But the world's changed, but you don't buy computers as often as you did. Used to be, you know, if you had a Windows 95 machine, you didn't go out and buy Windows 98. You'd buy a Windows 98 computer. Well, you know, yeah, people, I guess Microsoft noticed nobody's buying computers as much as they used to. In any event, this Windows 10, I think this is great. They're calling it Windows as a service instead of packaged software, and they're promising to update it 1, 2, maybe 3 times a year with big updates. Last year, they had the anniversary update in August. That was the one-year anniversary of Windows 10. This year, on April 11th, they're going to start offering you, not everybody at once. It's going to be what we call a staged rollout. So starting April 11th, some people will see, hey, there's a big update. It's called the Creators Update. There's some new features. There's some gaming mode. And it's not a massive change from how it looks, but it will be not an insignificant change under the hood. And while last year's anniversary update was a problem for a lot of people, broke things, broke some people's webcams, had weird bugs, like if you plugged in a Kindle, the computer crashed. Microsoft fixed those over time. And it's weird that we even have these bugs, because more than any other company in the business, Microsoft tests and tests and tests. And they have public betas. If you're a Windows insider, you've been using this Creators Edition for months. Millions of people use this software before they ship it out to the public. So I'm counting on it being reliable, but it is probably good advice that if you do get offered it on Tuesday, on April 11th, you'll be one of the first. Wait.
you can defer it. I think the new the deferral times have changed in Windows. I don't know how long. It might be you can defer it as long as a month, not much longer. But just defer it as long as you can. By the way, one of the things they are fixing in the Creators Update is this very annoying thing where Windows would, in the middle of work, say, oh, I'm going to reboot now. I got an update. No, I'm busy here. They're going to fix that. I won't be doing that anymore. So it's not a massive difference. It's not like going from Windows 10 to Windows 11 by any means. It's probably an update that everybody should take. And in fact, if you took the Windows 10 upgrade, you have to take it. And I think that's always a good idea. You always want to do the update. I just wanted to warn you that you should be expecting that starting Tuesday. And it may even take several months. And don't feel bad if you don't get it. And don't rush it if you don't get it. Microsoft will not push it to your computer until they're confident that everything you use, including that 12-year-old Oki Data printer, will continue to work. And so some people will get it later as Microsoft adds drivers and so forth. Solid Pixel in our chat room says, Windows' new motto, you have to take it, whether you like it or not. No, I think you'll want it. Dave in Flint, Michigan. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, oh, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Dave.
How are you doing, sir?
I am very, very well. I am feeling fit and fine, and spring is sprung. How are you, sir?
I'm doing excellent. Let's see if I can get this right this time. Okay. Long-time listener, second-time caller.
Good job. Good job.
Right.
Yes.
But I had so much to get to. Now I'm going to wax geek here again.
Oh, I love it. Go ahead. I love waxing geeks.
All right.
Wait a minute. That came out wrong.
I have... Careful.
Careful.
Very careful now. Okay.
Yes.
My problem?
Yes.
Or what I'm working on. A couple weeks ago, I called back. I was going to get a Synology.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
Yep.
Oh!
It, set it up.
How exciting. Which one did you get? Did you get the 2-drive?
I did get the 1515.
Oh, you got the 5-drive, 5-banger.
Yep.
Nice.
And started out, I was going to get 2 8-terabyte drives. And I got a third one. After getting through the what do you call it? The parity check.
Yeah.
I had to shut a lot of things down to speed up that parity check. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
Here's one for anyone getting a Synology drive. When you add a drive later and you're going through a parity check, go into your program controls and turn off all of your services.
That's a good tip. Because it takes a while. How long?
It takes a long while, especially going through a parity check on the disk surface for an 8-terabyte drive.
Yeah. Wow. Those are big drives. So you have 24 terabytes.
24 terabytes utilizing 16 in that.
Yeah, the other 8, and that's typical, usually about a third gets dedicated to what we call redundancy. So that if you can lose a drive and they still don't lose any data. That's good. Goodness gracious, 16 terabytes, you could put two libraries of Congress on your Synology.
Finding ways to fill it up.
The only thing I could think of would be movies and TV shows, things like that, big rich media files.
That's a large portion of it, but I also have a rather killer amount of images and other resources.
Right. Okay. You're a pack rat, but that's what these are made for. So what can I do to help you?
Okay. I got a couple of questions, but let's get to the main one. I want to access it. I want to try to access it so that it's secure. Now,
right.
A lot of times the Synology software says that if you do it this way, it's secure, but...
Let me explain. I should explain what all of this is so people listening go, what is he talking about? So this is called I love it. Don't mind me. It's called a network attached storage. It is a computer that has a lot of hard drive space, as you can tell, but no keyboard, mouse, or monitor. You control it through your browser on other computers. It's on the network. Network attached storage. The one we always talk about and love is Synology. It's really kind of expensive because, you know, well, it's fancy stuff. It's a big computer. It's powerful. But it is the best kind of, you know, network storage solution because of their software. Now, when you set it up,
One of the things you can do is access it remotely. See, I use my Synology from computers at work, for instance, to back up, to copy files. I use it as a replacement for Evernote for my notepad because it's got a very nice note. You know, Synology has a DS notepad. It's really excellent. So I need to be able to access it from outside. And, of course, you want to use HTTPS. You want it to be secure.
Mm-hmm.
And the Synology offers two ways of doing this. One is using their own system where you actually connect through the Synology servers, and it will connect you. And that's kind of nice because it does NAT traversal. You don't have to port forward or open a port. The other way is you have to open a port, and you can get your own certificate. Hang on, I got to take a break, but I'll explain that all to you, probably off the air, just because, you know, in Geeks Wax, it's weird. So Synology has a self-signed cert that's on there.
Yes, that one's on there. And the thing was is that that was still producing these security errors.
Are you using? I can't remember what Synology calls it, but the connection system, so that you just give it a name and it connects through the Synology server.
I did set that up, and it's the name that I selected for it. Synology.me.
Yeah.
And I tried that with the original Synology self-signed cert and was still getting the not secure messages. So the first thing I went is they offered two things, Let's Encrypt and a Komodo. Now, the Komodo is the paid service.
Don't do Komodo. They're terrible. Do Let's Encrypt. Geez.
Well, I did Let's Encrypt, and I'm still getting that message. Let's Encrypt is now my default certificate in my drive.
Good. I did Let's Encrypt as well. Yeah.
And actually, I tried accessing it using my my Synology.me connection, and I was not able to access it a little while ago. But usually what it does is it seems to re-resolve me as my local, the thing that I get from my Comcast internet.
Right.
The local internet for that with the proper port number.
Right.
And
so you opened a port for the Synology.
Yes. Okay. I used the tools to...
No. 5001 or 5002 or 5003.
5001.
Okay.
And I used its port forwarding setup in order to set this thing up.
Good.
So I did not manually go into my router and set those like I normally do, but it seemed to have been working.
You don't... Yeah.
The only thing is that I cannot get that to resolve, and I'm wondering... I mean, I was wondering if it had something to do with because I'm using a Comcast regular user account. Should I get a business class? Should I?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. Okay. I have to say, and this may be a Synology bug, which I haven't tracked down. So I'm using both systems. I got a Let's Encrypt certificate. I am using three ports, 5001, 2, and 3. I have my own domain name, so I'm using my own domain name for it. So sometimes when I attach the software on my remote computer, I'll use my name, laporte.cloud:5001. And sometimes I'll just use the Synology assigned name. In both cases, I've had problems. When I use my own domain name, I almost invariably says it won't connect. So I don't know
Yeah. I didn't do that then.
Yeah. So I end up using the Synology connection method. But even with the Synology connection method, and maybe I'm doing something wrong or they have a bug, but even with the Synology connection method, about once a month, the certificate will fail and I'll have to reattach. I was thinking it might have something to do with the Let's Encrypt cert because I don't know if it's doing the self-signed cert or the Let's Encrypt cert since I did the Let's Encrypt method. But for some reason, now one thing about Let's Encrypt, every 90 days, Let's Encrypt updates the cert. So I'm thinking it might be that every 90 days I'm going to have to reattach. That's possible. But you're saying you never get a good connection or you just get the complaint.
I never get a good connection. It's always saying that it is not a secure connection.
Yeah.
And occasionally I get that message through Chrome that says this is not secure.
Yeah.
You are at risk.
And that's if you're using...
I know I'm doing this.
Are you using your...
I'm using Chrome.
And you're using your custom domain or are you using the Synology connection?
the Synology connection, whether I use the Synology.me or I use the Quick Connect.
Right. Hookup. Quick Connect is the word I was looking for. Interesting. I don't know. I mean, I would guess something's connected wrong. I do use the Quick Connect, and that's reliable, except for every month or so when I have to reconnect.
It always seems to work. The Quick Connect is the most reliable connection from external access.
Yes.
But the thing is that it still produces the not secure warning. And I'm wondering if there was something about the way that I had set it up.
Hang on a second.
Oh, here we go.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, last half hour of the show for this weekend. I've been having great fun geeking out with my geek friend Dave and Flint about his Synology NAS. And I'll tell you what, I don't probably want to do this in public, but because it's so geeky and it's so specific to you. And I'm not sure exactly what's failing, but I do use the Synology built-in Quick Connect system reliably on my system, so that I can log in from another computer outside of my network and get into my Synology network attached storage and actually back up via that. I synchronize a folder or rather a lot of folders via that, and I also use it, as I said, as an Evernote replacement.
Yep.
So I don't.
I really wanted this.
Yeah.
I really wanted this because this was like everything I wanted as far as being able to back up. I was going to go to my second one. It would be the second question, and I don't know if we want to go that far. But this was the idea, to have the heart, have the storage there, have it. It's all UPS backup.
I put a UPS on it as well. That way, if the power goes out, it shuts down in an orderly fashion, which is really nice.
And then making sure everything's stored there, everything comes back there, and everything's backed up there.
Beautiful.
And then doubling it out, because the next thing was, okay, now I've got all these other drives that I was using. I want to put those into another unit.
And bring that off site and have them synchronize.
Yes,
if you do that, I would be willing to bet lots of money that you will never lose a bit of data again. I mean, that is about
as... I've already lost gigs. I already mentioned that the last time.
Yeah.
Never again.
Never again.
It had to happen several times.
Yeah. So the Synology has a built-in synchronization process that will keep a remote version of the same Synology up to date. So that way, you've got full off-site backup of all... Now, don't expect 16 terabytes to be backed up overnight. It's going to be a multi-month, maybe year process. In fact, what I would do is I'd locally connect them first.
I'd populate them before I spread them apart.
Yeah. And by the way, Mike B's pointing out, you could use the remote server. It doesn't have to be a Synology because it supports rsync. So you could, any NAS or any drive would be able to do this.
There you go.
It does it kind of nicely with a Synology automatically. So.
I'm happy with the way Synology has been working so far, except this twist.
I don't know, and I don't know what the certificate issue is. I think I would say call them because it's probably something in your setup, but I don't know exactly what, and I can't really walk through the setup with you. It's funny, if a good friend of mine emailed me because he said, "Am I smart enough to have a Synology?" And I said, "You are."
Yes, I heard that.
I said, "You are."
I don't think it's that hard to set up. It is. It can get geeky like this, but
yeah,
it does work. Just be careful about how many things you set up on it.
That's what I told him. I think I might have told you as well, is don't turn on. You have so many features that you're tempted to turn them all on at once. And I would use as little as possible, just for security, if nothing else. And more servers you've got running on that Synology, the more attack vectors you have, surfaces you have. Yep. So it's probably best to use it as minimally as is convenient. You've got me. I don't know what's wrong. I can only say that I'm doing it and it's working.
You've had problems yourself. I mean, that definitely.
I've had little flaky problems and have never been able, sometimes, well, I shouldn't say never. Sometimes I'm able to use my own URL, sometimes not. So I don't, it's a puzzlement. And, call me when you talk to Synology, because if they've got a good fix, I'd like to hear about it, Dave.
I will.
And I will also ask, because we have local experts here who have, You know, I got sold on buying a Synology from Father Robert and some of our other hosts on the show, and they all love it, and I'm going to ask them, what do you do?
Yes, that would be especially useful, especially if any of those notes can be
I will get them in the show notes. Whatever I figure out, we'll go to the show notes. And I hope you'll do the same. TechGuyLabs.com. Not only do we put stuff there, everything I talk about, and links to all the products and so forth, but you're welcome to, too. We have a comment section, and you could comment right on that. Yep. Hey, thanks for the call. You want some more? You want more of my time? Go ahead. Let's wax geeky.
That next analogy, I have 4 terabyte and 2 terabyte drives, and I know when you set these things up, sometimes the way that they pick a drive size or the space, how you expand them, I'm wondering if I should make it just put a couple of 2 terabytes and expand that way, because that's how the hybrid drives will determine the size, or if it will waste them if I do 4.
No. That's the old RAID 5 technology. Synology is smarter than that. You can have heterogeneous drives.
It should be able to figure out, yes, based on drive size. I can put them in any order.
That's my understanding.
That's really all it is from that question, I think.
That's my understanding. Hey, Dave, great to talk to you. Always fun to wax geek. Take care, Dave. I apologize to all of you for the lack of English in the last 15 minutes of the show, but we're going to endeavor to continue to speak English now and talk to Rocky in Hawthorne, California. Hi, Rocky.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, I've been looking at a 13-inch Dell Inspiron. It's a 5000 series, but it is an i7 7500U. It's got it's a 2-in-1 8 gigs and a 256 SSD.
Love them.
500 HD or a 1 terabyte for about $700.
Great price. These are nice computers. I like 2-in-1s because you can use them as a tablet. You can tent them. Very flexible. I don't have this particular Dell. I have another Dell 13, the XPS 13, which doesn't do all of that, but I love it.
Well, I got to say that the one problem I've heard and actually seen is that the screen is not very bright and the picture's not very sharp.
Well, you're getting a less expensive computer. So they're going to give, something's got to give. And so they're using probably a less good, a lesser LCD panel. If you want a better, screen, the XPS has a better screen, smaller bezels. That's really their high-end 13-inch laptop. Here's one thing you could do. You don't need an i7.
Mm-hmm.
The i7 is a souped-up i5. And unless you're launching rocket ships, I think the i5 is probably sufficient for most people. And that might save you enough money that you could... Do they have a touch screen and a non-touch screen?
They do, but not in the 2-in-1s.
Okay. You want a touch screen, obviously, right?
Yes, and I was hoping that maybe you might have some information on maybe another manufacturer.
Sure, there are lots of companies that make these style 2-in-1s. Lenovo's Yoga is an excellent choice. Those are very good. And I believe Asus makes excellent 2-in-1s as well. This 2-in-1 has become a very popular form factor. People love it.
I haven't seen any Sony Toshibas out there lately.
Don't get a Sony or Toshiba. Sony got out of the laptop business. Toshiba's poised to get out of the laptop business. Those were big names years ago. And they've failed, essentially. And the names now, the dominant names now are Lenovo, HP, Dell, Asus, and Acer.
Okay. I've got one other quick question.
Sure.
I have a very old HP Vista Home Premium. It was a DV6500 notebook. It had an Intel Core 2 DU CPU and 2 gigs of memory, and it was a 32-bit machine. Would it be able to hold a, a preview of, say, Windows 7?
I mean, they won't let you install Windows 7 on it unless it can, but that where you're going to get bit is that 2 gigs of RAM is a little light. Yeah, Windows 7 might run on it. But it won't run well, I guess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, I think that that's mostly the problem. The processor be okay. You don't want to keep running Vista. That's out of date.
Oh, I know that. I was just hoping that I could put a preview of Windows 7, and then I might be able to get some money.
Oh, I see. You want to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know of any way to do that. I mean, you can dual boot it. That's an interesting question.
If I erase the computer completely and just put the trial version on, and then maybe I could get rid of it.
You have 30 days. Yes, you could totally do that. You have 30 days to try it. You don't have to activate it for 30 days. So if that's what you mean, you want to try it without buying it, yes, you can do that. It's a little...
Try it and then get rid of it while it's still on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have the XP? Do you have the original XP install disks?
On the Vista?
Or Vista, rather, yeah.
No. I think it's somewhere.
Make sure you have those, because otherwise you can't go back, right?
Well, I'm not going to want to go back.
No, you won't. No, you won't. And by the way, the chat room's saying 2 gigs of RAM is sufficient for Windows 7.
Oh,
yeah, it won't run like a top.
I don't care.
It'll run.
I just wanted to be able to take it in, and they see it's got Windows 7 and it's working, and they'll give me some money.
Oh, you're a clever.
Hopefully,
Cove, you're trying to find somebody to buy this piece of junk. I mean, fine vintage laptop. It's a vintage laptop. It won't fool them because they'll know what the original operating system was as soon as they look up the model number.
Well, I know they wouldn't take my Sony. Very first little laptops that came out.
Yeah, those Sonys used to be good. Those Vios, but they've got out of the business. A number of people are saying that the Inspiron 7000 has a great screen. And I know you were looking at a 5000, but you might step up to the 7 for.
Is that the 7000 series versus the 5000 series?
Yes, that's what he's saying. Yes.
Okay, because I didn't understand how you would have a 5000 series with an i7, but
yeah, they shouldn't do that.
It's confusing.
They shouldn't do that. Because you're right, the 5000 is supposed to be the mid range. But you know it's a little more for the 7000s, but they are apparently they're better screens, and that's why they're better screens. You're spending
something to last me for at least 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, so you don't need the i7. Get an i5 in the 7000, and it'll have a better screen. This one is a IPS, which is a better quality screen than the one in the 5000 series.
Okay, I'll keep that.
But you
in
don't
mind.
Need the i7. Get the i5 and the 7000 series. You get a better screen.
Okay. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Sony is not selling laptops. Sony has reformed its PC business. So I think that they've got somebody else to buy the brand is what happened, but don't buy a Sony laptop. Should never have bought a Sony laptop in the first place. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, playing some great music today. Thanks also to Kim Schaffer, answering some great phone calls for us today, lining up some great callers. Thanks to you for joining us, too. I ended up spending a little more time with our caller during the break and convinced Rocky that maybe the best thing to do would be, instead of getting the Inspiron 5000 series, step up to the 7000 series. That's the next level up from Dell. And you spend a couple $100 more, but you get a much nicer screen. You get a lot of more, I'd say, pro features like an SSD. She said, well, why do they sell an i7 in the lower series, the 5000? They shouldn't, probably. Nobody really needs an i7 processor. That's just a way to get more money out of you. So save the money. Get an i5 processor. Intel i5 is a very powerful processor. And take the money you're saving on that and put that towards the screen by moving up to the 7000 series. That would be a good choice. Now, I've also been corrected by the chat room. They say, no, Windows 7 runs fine in 2 gigs of RAM. And, of course, it does. In fact, I even have some Windows 7 computers lying around that came with 2 gigs of RAM. So, absolutely, you can put Windows 7 on. I take it back. I was wrong. Erwin is in the Bronx. Hi, Erwin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Mr. Laporte. How are you?
I'm great, Mr. Erwin. How are you?
Okay, I'm fine. It's been a while. I've been watching you for a long while, got a question, and I finally think I got lucky by talking to you now.
Oh, good.
Okay. What I've got here is a Dell Vostro 470.
Yeah.
It's a couple of years old.
Yeah, I remember those. Yeah.
Right. And it's really good. It's a i7. It's got a lot of RAM because they do a lot of photography.
It was their small business line, the Vostros.
Right.
Yes.
Somebody put it together for me, and then I went ahead and put in a larger processor.
Great.
About a year ago, my disk drive went. And what I did was I just simply, you know, I've got a backup. And what I did was I just went to the local computer store, bought a new disk drive, put it in, put everything down, and then discovered that what I had bought was a 3 terabyte drive.
Right.
Okay, now, then I went and I said, okay.
And you were only seeing how much of that 3 terabyte drive?
Now I'm only able to use 2.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I've now discovered...
What version of Windows are you using, real quickly?
Windows 10.
Okay, that's good. So the version of Windows can be the limitation, the hardware can be the limitation.
In this case, I think it's really the limitation is the fact that when I went into my BIOS, I looked and it said you either use UEFI or what they call a legacy.
Right.
Okay, well, it's a legacy is checked.
That doesn't matter on the hard drive. That's for the operating system. Some operating systems don't support secure boot and UEFI. So legacy is a compatibility mode for older operating systems.
Right. Well, what I've run across is that if you attempt to go from member to GPT, you lose a lot of stuff.
Right.
Okay, and then I've seen things that, well, we've got a utility that if you use our utility, you don't need to worry about losing any kind of data. It will just simply convert.
That's called the non-destructive repartitioning. And that's fine. It works. But you should still have a backup just in case.
Let me tell you, well, I have a backup.
Yeah.
Also, yesterday I ran across something else.
I should say that you would almost certainly want to run, especially with a larger drive like that, boot into UEFI mode using the GPT format. Almost certainly.
Yes. It kind of looks like, from what I've read, one goes hand in hand.
They go, yes. It's all modern technology. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We used to use,
remember MBR, Master Boot Record? Now
that's
we do
exactly what I've got now.
Yes, that's the old school, and we now use a GPT, which is what, General Partition Table. I don't know what the G stands for, but GUID. Oh, it's a GUID partition table. There you go. It's an acronym within an acronym, a nesting acronym, if you will.
Exactly. Well, I also ran across something yesterday that says that Microsoft, with their new version that's coming out on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
Will now support the conversion from MBR to GPT.
Oh.
So that I can take advantage.
Nice.
Without losing the data. And I was kind of curious, do you know anything about this at all?
I mean, I'm sure that my friend Paul Thurrott in our Windows show mentioned it. I just, I was probably sleeping at the time, but I don't know anything about it. So there are existing third-party tools right now, like Mini Tools, but... Yeah, wait till Tuesday. Maybe you can do it then. And that you should absolutely, if your operating system and your motherboard and your drive support it, you should absolutely be using UEFI and GPT. That's what Windows 10 is designed for. And so use it all. Use the modern, all of that. The MBR, that's the old way of formatting hard drives. Remember BIOS? We replaced it with EFI and UEFI has this feature, secure boot feature, that is a good bit of security. It means that, you know, it's hard. You can't use a operating system that's not signed with a certificate. All of that's good stuff. You want that.
Right.
So I would wait, find out. You can wait till Tuesday, or you may not get it right away, but you can wait till you get the creator's update. And if I'll have to look and see, I could ask Paul. I'll see Paul on Wednesday. I'll ask him. But that would be a nice feature.
It would be, because I waited so long for this. So I guess I'll wait.
That's a non-destructive partition manager is a great thing to have. And if Microsoft's putting that in their operating system, bully for them. That's good. That's typically how they do it. They don't want to kill a market. So if there's a lot of third-party partition managers, they don't want to suddenly put such a good partition manager in Windows that all of them go out of business. They'd get antitrust action. So they're slow to move on that stuff. And usually what they do is they signal it. Look what they did with antiviruses, right? Windows now comes with an antivirus. But they slowly warned the antivirus companies, this is coming. This is coming. Be careful. They didn't build it in until Windows 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I really, really thank you very, very much for your real help.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I love talking to people who are doing their thing and using computers the way they were meant to. Formatting their drives, buying new drives, all that stuff. It's not hard, is it? And it's kind of fun. It's for some people. If you're not the kind of person that thinks this sounds like fun, then you probably shouldn't do it. You should get somebody else to do it. I only recommend it for people who enjoy it, building their own systems, adding, exchanging, modifying. One more call. I mean, I only got about a minute left. Let's see if we can handle David in Boca Raton, Florida. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo, this should be a great, easy question for you. It has to do with what I heard you briefly talking about. I'm trying to go ahead and download the new version that's free, as you discussed earlier, Windows 10, from the Windows site, not from strange places.
Good.
And I've come up with two. I've come up with Windows Anniversary and Windows whatever the new one is that you were talking about.
Do they have the creative update? That's right. You can get the creator's update now. Yeah, you can.
It's up there now. But underneath that, there's three other formats. It says just plain Windows 10, Windows 10N, and Windows 10 single language. What's the difference between those three?
That's a great question. I have no idea. I see it myself. Windows 10N, chat room, do you have any idea what N is? You should get Windows 10. And you should might as well get the creator's update too. N would probably be a network install, I would guess. Single language means it doesn't have support for other languages. That makes it smaller. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. N is EU. Okay, there you go. Oh, and I get it. Now, okay, here's the deal. This is good. This is good information. So I'm glad you asked. And now I always learn from this show. So the N is an EU version. And because, remember, of all the EU lawsuits against Windows, that's got a lot of stuff changed, you know, without the add-ons, without the browser. Maybe it's got the browser ballot. I guess they don't still do that. But that's the European edition. So, no Internet Explorer is what it stands for. Okay, thank you, Friendly Manitoba. I don't know if that's true. And then there's a KN edition, which is Korea. And they have the base features, but without Windows Media Player, related technologies pre-installed. I don't think any. Yeah, for Windows 10 editions, that's Windows Media Player, music, video, voice recorder, and Skype. So it's a stripped-down version for Europe. Get Windows 10, in other words. And the single language, obviously. You know, just one language. All right. And is not for net installed. Oh, well. I can dream. It is for Europe. Good question. Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.